following is brought to you by the Shining Wizards Network, available on iTunes, Stitcher, Audioboo, and at swn.shiningwizards.com.
The Shining Wizards Network proudly presents the Turnbuckle Throwbacks Wrestling Podcast with your hosts, the Impact Playa, Phil Rea, and Dave Mega Powers.
What's up, everybody? This is the Ace of Belts, Dave Milliken, WWE Beltmaker. You're listening to the Turnbuckle Throwback Radio Podcast.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls and children of a mature age, because we have potty mouth, as always. Welcome to another beautiful edition of the Turnbuckle Throwbacks Wrestling Podcast. As always, your host, the Impact Player, Mr. Phil Rea, and I'm joined finally by...
the Mega Powers.
Yes.
And
yes.
We don't just got potty mouth. We got, like, diarrhea mouth. We got...
yeah, dude, we're bad news.
Yeah.
Especially you. You got terrible potty mouth.
Oh, my God.
But listen, I saw a picture of you the other night.
Yeah.
Rocking with some punk rock Japanese chicks.
The 5678s.
Dude, I heard of them, and I saw the picture, and I'm like, look at that.
Well, you seen Kill Bill, right?
Of course. They're from the Kill Bill movie. But
yeah.
I remember them getting off topic real quick, because, you know, Dave and I are big music heads, and we're going to start incorporating some music into the show. I just have to figure out how. But we're going to, because we...
oh, I got a song for the end of the show if you want to...
yeah, absolutely. But it's nice when these bands come around that you don't see often, you know?
Yeah, and well, as I got to see up close and personal, you know, they ain't getting any much younger.
No, they're not.
Because when they started like... I want to say either like the mid or late 80s.
Right, God, had to be mid 80s, yeah.
They had to be like in their late teens or early 20s. So, what, that's like 30 years ago.
Yeah, every time CBGBs would have like a festival, they would come through.
Yeah.
And play CBs a lot, you know, when I was a kid. So, good for you, man.
So, yeah, they're still looking good, but they're getting there. So, I'm just happy that I got to see them finally, you know?
Yeah, and it's a good segue because today's throwback is insane. You sent me this a couple of weeks ago.
Oh, yeah.
And as you all know, anybody who knows me personally now knows I hate women's wrestling.
I think most people do, and, you know, to a degree, they got justification. You know, look at the stuff that we've seen over the years, you know, in the 80s, the 90s. Well, to a degree, the 90s. We got some good stuff. Thunder Blaze, Bull Nakano.
Well, I was spoiled because I liked women's wrestling as a kid only because it was primarily tag team wrestling.
Okay.
You had Velvet McIntyre, Judy Martin, the Glamour Girls. You had the Jumping Bomb Angels.
Oh, yeah.
You had Moolah. You had Sherry Martel. They were always involved. Lunja Blaze. What was her name again? She was something
Medusa.
Else. Medusa Miceli, yeah.
Yeah.
So you always had that tag team element. For some reason, I dug the tag teams. This particular podcast we're doing today not only covers half a member of one of the greatest women's tag teams of all time, probably the greatest women's wrestler of all time.
Possibly, yeah.
Possibly.
Yeah, one of them.
And, you know, when, again, and Dave and I spoke about Japanese wrestling in length on how it's a whole different animal over there.
Oh God, yeah.
The culture, the fans, the
work rate.
The work rate was especially in this bunch. We're not going to do every match, but we're going to talk about the legendary feud that was Chigusa Nagayo and Dump Matsumoto.
Oh yeah.
Now, here's what I got from Chigusa. She's been a two-time All-Pacific champion. Now, All-Pacific is the women's division of All Japan, right?
All Japan Women's, yeah.
Okay. All right. That's. I want to make sure I'm getting my facts right.
Yes.
All right. She was a two-time IWA Women's Champion,
mm-hmm.
a two-time All Japan Women's Junior Champion, a one-time WWWA Women's Heavyweight Champion.
The Big Red Belt.
The Big Red Belt. And the four-time WWWA Tag Team Champion. She was the one-time Japan Grand Prix champion, which is the – that's a tournament, the big trophy tournament like they have in – well, Japan has the Grand Prix.
They got the G1.
The G1, right. Yeah. Okay, so that's the women's version of the G1, I'm gonna assume.
Yeah. The Madison Square Garden tournament that they had before that and, you know, so on and so forth.
She was a two-time tag league, the best, they call it. It's a tag team tournament, 86 and 87. And she was an old Japan Women's Hall of Famer in 98. And she even got a cauliflower honoree notification over there in 96. Her partner was – her longtime partner was the Lioness Asuka.
Yeah, Crush
part
Gals.
Part of the Crush Gals. Now I got some
of the best names, Crush Gals.
The Crush Gals. They were probably the premier tag team next to my favorite tag team, the Jumping Bomb Angels.
Yes. Well, you all know from Survivor Series 87 –
and Madison Square Garden, 1986, and we'll get into that.
Yeah,
and I didn't. I put two and two together after I was watching something else, and we'll get into that in a few minutes. But they feuded with the Bomb Angels. Now the Bomb Angels were in. If the Crush Gals didn't get injured one time, the Bomb Angels would have been multiple tag champions, but it never came to pass.
They were number two.
They were number two, like a slight number two, and they had some. That's gonna have to be in another match to pull up because you know what. This will make me, you know.
Oh, and I got tons of Jumping Bomb Angels at home. So.
Do you really? Yeah. That's fantastic.
I got like seven discs.
See, I love the Jumping Bomb Angels.
Yeah.
Now Nagayo started a league shortly after her run. Was it called the GAEA?
I believe it's pronounced Gaia.
Gaia, right?
Yeah.
And she was She was their heavyweight champion. And she was their single champion before they made it. That was like the belt before they made it a heavyweight. They unified it. They unified the belts or whatever. And she was a tag team champion one time in that league. And she actually feuded with her old partner for that title.
Oh, yeah.
That was a long time feud. All right. Again, she was part of the Crush Gals with the Jumping Bomb Angels. And they feuded with the Gukaku Domei, which is in English the Atrocious Alliance.
Yes.
Dump Matsumoto and... her partner was, I believe...
Well, there was several people in there.
Bull Nakano was one of her partners.
Yeah.
And I forget...
Bull Nakano.
Right. And we're going to actually... we're watching it now, actually. Well, one of the matches, anyway. And getting back to Nagayo, she had some sick finishing moves. She had a bunch of more powerbomb variations. She had one called the folding powerbomb, which is the running three, which is a running one-shoulder fall. She had the super freak... showing the time, the 80s. Yes. It was a tilt-a-whirl. The Super Freak 2, which is a gut-wrench spinning suplex. She had a Death Valley driver. She had a diving moonsault. The kneeling reverse pile driver. And she had several like suplexes, like Tazplexes or whatever it is.
So. It's probably like later Nagayo because if you watch a lot of the early All Japan women stuff, it's very basic, kind of NWA style kind of wrestling.
You know,
well, except for these matches. These matches that we're about to talk about are pure entertainment. This is very unlike the normal Japanese fare you would think of, but this is some amazing shit.
I was, you know, you said to me, oh, we should do this, and you sent me all the clips, and I downloaded them first before I started watching them, and then I, you know, gradually opened everything up, and then... every other day I was hitting the thumb drive, opening them up, and I'm like, this is just... It got crazier as the matches progressed.
Yeah.
Like, and we'll get into that. But let's talk about Dump Matsumoto. Am I saying these names right?
Yeah, you're saying them right.
All right, because you need to, like, correct me, all right?
Dump Matsumoto.
All right, so what do you know about Dump?
Well, Dump is just offhand. This person does have training, but she's kind of... how can I word it? She's like the female... Abdul the Butcher, but maybe not as bloody and not as scarred up, but she's very proficient with a fork.
5'4", 200 pounds.
Oh, yeah.
Of all woman.
This is, I guess you could say this is Bull Nakano's mentor. When you get to that, when we put up the links for this, you'll see that these are just like a pure punk rock metal, just like gang of women.
Yeah, and her main partners, like you mentioned, were Bull Nakano, who you guys all know from WWF and WCW, and Crane U.
Crane Yu.
Crane Yu wasn't. She wasn't the looker. I can tell you that.
No. Condor Saito is definitely a looker.
Yeah, you know what, dude? I noticed a lot of her crew weren't lookers except for her, the one chick, the Condor chick.
Yeah.
She was a looker. Other than that,
like these are just like very thick thighed, 200-plus pound women.
Yeah, but don't get it twisted. These girls can go. Like yeah. as big as Dump was, as we just saw her throw a Texas Clover Leaf. It was you know, it's not. It wasn't at a place for these girls to go all out. You know, Nagayo sold everything. She was fantastic. You know. Okay, so Bull Nakano, Crane Yu, they were briefly in the WWF as the Devils of Japan. Now, here's a bonus story for you guys. Now, back in 86, I'm about a year into going to the house shows. Tito Santana had just lost his belt to the Macho Man in the Boston Garden. I was at the rematch, totally forgetting as an 11-year-old that they were on the card.
Devils of Japan.
Devils of Japan. Back in March of 86, they beat Velvet McIntyre and Dawn Marie, who you guys know better as Linda Gonzalez, who competed primarily in Japan anyway. I was at the MSG show, and I have the MSG show. I have the card.
Nice.
So let me just run down the card real quick, if you don't mind. All right. The entire card at that night was CV Afi beating Moondog Spot. Hercules Hernandez defeated George Wells. The Devils of Japan defeated McIntyre and Dawn Marie, a.k.a. Linda Gonzalez. Cowboy Bob Orton defeated Pedro Morales. Don Morocco beat King Tonga. The Crush Gals defeated Leilani Kai and Penny Mitchell. Mm. Penny Mitchell was a Mid-South chick that they, you know, they would swap talent. There were a lot of women's wrestlers back in the 80s.
Yeah.
This was actually one of the go-home shows to WrestleMania 2. So Bundy was on a tear right now. He beat Hillbilly Jim. Ricky Steamboat beat Mr. Fuji. Fuji still wrestled at this point. They had some karate matches back in the day. Jake the Snake Roberts made his MSG debut. Mm. And he beat Leaping Lanny Poffo. And the IC title rematch, Chico Santana defeated Randy Savage by DQ. The Haiti Kid defeated Dana Carpenter, midget match. And the main event was a six-man tag. Was the Bulldogs and Albano against the Dream Team and Luscious Johnny Vey.
I've seen that match.
So I, too, actually, you gave me that match on the Bulldogs tape.
Yeah.
But I was there. And I don't remember, like, I remember, now I'm just bringing it back to me, like, I'm watching the matches and reading about the girls. I'm like, I was there for that. So I dug more, and I tried to find the card, and I found the card. Mm. I was like, I got to tell Dave. I was totally there. If I find my ticket stub, I'll definitely put it on the Facebook page, I promise.
It's amazing how, you know, you could be there for something like that and just, you know, since they're not a name here, you just don't know what the history is behind some of these people that are.
Well, I knew Bull, I knew Bull Nakano because Bull, I didn't see any of her stuff in Japan, but I knew she was big in Japan.
Yeah.
Because WCW, listen, for all the crap that WCW got, they did a really good job promoting their foreign stuff.
Yeah.
New Japan, All Japan, mostly New Japan.
Yeah.
They were very instrumental on bringing guys and girls here. Bull Nakano, Jushin Liger, Masahiro Chono, Hiroshi Tenzan, he was with the Hellraisers with the Hawk and Animal.
Yeah.
You know, so like it goes hand in hand. So they did a really good job of doing that. All right, so.
Wait, did you just say Tenzan was part of the Hellraisers?
Was it Tenzan?
No, it was Katsuki Sasaki.
Kasaki, I'm sorry. Tenzan was. Well,
Kensuke Sasaki.
Right. So I apologize, but same time, same era, same group of guys. They even started an NWO in Japan.
Yeah,
you know. So I mean, it got big. It got really big.
And the big guys for that were Chono and Muda.
Right. Exactly.
The big deal was trying to get Muda into the NWO.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. So you know, but Matsumoto was the colorful one of this feud with Nagayo.
Oh yeah.
Nagayo was the. She was the, you know, the baby face.
Well, one thing that I want to throw out there with, you know, some of you guys may not know, but especially for the faces, they would have them not just, you know, they weren't just wrestlers, but they were also just performers and artists in general. They would have them come into the ring and sing songs. They released records.
Yeah, we're going to get into that in a couple of minutes.
So these were like any way they could promote these women as faces or as heels, they did that. This was like a full spectrum kind of thing. They weren't just wrestlers. So going into this, one of the things that makes these feuds like so hot is just how emotionally invested these fans are. And as you'll see when you watch some of these matches, you know, the crowd is generally like probably like teenage girls. And one of the big things is the pom-pom girls. Like you'll see some like kids in the audience with like these pom-poms, like
yeah,
cheering them on. And like one of the awesome things about these matches is that these kids are chanting their names,
yep,
like Chigusa's name, the entire match.
Yep. And it's a good segue, partner, because they Chigusa was a performer. She sang like she was like the mall singer, like Tiffany was to us in the 90s, you know.
Yeah.
She would sing and perform and like you know bubblegum shit.
Yeah.
And Matsumoto, to her credit, was not only a part of a cartoon, but part of a video game.
Yeah. As you saw on the page.
On the page, nobody can answer it. Couple of guys came close, though.
Sinikano, she was on the cover.
She was on the cover, right.
It's not her game.
Matsumoto lent her ring name and likeness to a Sega game called Gokaku Dome Matsumoto.
Dome.
You big Dome. Gakuko Dome Matsumoto. I'm getting better, yeah, sir. I practiced all friggin' week.
I bet you did.
Because I don't want to, you know, I know you're
but
aficionado.
You look into the mirror, saying it over.
No,
and over
dude, again. Honestly, dude, I knew. Masada, Kobashi, Muda. I knew all the big names, and I watched all the tape trade in the 90s. But I want to, if I'm going to do stuff like this, I want to make sure I come correct, and I don't want to disappoint you and the fans. So.
And you haven't so far. So.
So he also appeared in several Japanese films during the late 80s to early 90s, and she had a sick lariat and a superplex as her finishers.
Oh, yeah.
So, again, these chicks were not only talented inside the ring, but outside the ring. All right? So now, let's get into the first match. This was the original hair match.
Yeah.
From August 28th, 1985.
Now, let me just put this out there. You know, I know hair versus hair matches are a big deal in Mexico. And, you know, we've had a few big hair versus hair matches in the U.S., but...
They were big.
But for guys, if you lose your hair, like, you don't have any hair. You look fine. It's not a big deal if you lose your hair. It looks
right.
Like this... This character's, you know, persona revolves around his hair or something like that. But for women to get their hair cut, especially a stupid haircut,
right?
That's a big deal,
right? You know, it's funny because the hair versus hair thing was going around since the 70s and the 60s.
Yeah,
like different territories did it a lot. Like they would like to have the loser leaves town versus your hair, or hair versus hair,
yeah,
some kind of variation. The significance of this was not only did it not happen in Japan often, or maybe even at all. I don't know.
First of all, you know, these kind of like novelty gimmick matches just don't happen that often in Japan. Like if you see a cage match, it's a big deal.
But
know?
Yeah, in the main promotions.
Yeah.
Like guys, you know, this happened in Wing and FMW and IWA,
yeah,
and didn't happen in All Japan or New Japan.
No.
Did New Japan even have a women's division?
New Japan? No, not that I know.
Just Old Japan, right?
I'll have to do some research. If they did, it probably didn't last too long.
All right, so...
But All Japan Women's Wrestling was the big deal.
Was the premiere, right.
Yeah.
Right.
They were tops.
So as Dave and I are watching the match has just subsided, but we just got to get into this, and I'll pause that for a second. Let's pause it for a second.
You want to go to the first part? So while we're just...
Well, this was the first part.
No, this is the second part.
This is the second part? Really?
Yeah.
Where am I? Oh.
I know there's chaos.
Go back to the first part.
Yeah, there's chaos throughout all these matches. But
right, yeah. So I love Dump's entrance music. It's very, 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 very 80s.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's
like that...
Midnight Expressious, you know, like...
Like the Andre the Giant kind of... Well, his one theme song.
Right. And I love the heel stable, the flags of the crews,
yeah,
you know? And I love the fact that this Rob Halford-looking chick... taking swipes Well, actually, it was at just taking swipes at the front of the row with a friend rocking the kendo stick, looking like a fat female Rob Halford.
And just to throw this out there, one of the people with Dump's crew is a name from WWF in the 90s.
Bull Nakano.
No, there was another one.
Who?
The white woman.
The white woman. Who was?
She doesn't look familiar.
The one with the red shirt on.
Yeah. I'm just gonna tell you, it's Bertha Fay.
That's Bertha Fay?
Yeah.
No
shit. She went under the name Monster Ripper back then.
That's right. No way.
Yeah.
So,
but she wasn't like 5,000 pounds like she was in the '90s. But here,
WWF, she was with Harvey Whippleman, right?
Yeah. Here she's more, muscular.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
So Bertha Fay was part of the stable, huh? Wow.
Gokuaku Dome.
Gokuaku Dome.
There you go.
The Atrocious Alliance.
Yes.
All right, so the Alliance comes out. They're in full garb. The kendo stick is in full effect. I love the fact that...
Full leather and
police
hats.
She looks like a fat Rob Halford from Judas Priest.
Yeah.
Without the chaps.
With like the 10 pounds of makeup on their face, the bleached hair.
Well, that was big in the 80s.
The pink and blue dyed hair.
Yep. And now here comes Nagayo, who her music also very 80s, and the crowd was so into her, man. She was so over. And
like the fans are just...
They're
rabid. They are throffing at the mouth for her to win. They are chanting her name, literally. All three matches that we're going to talk about, they are just chanting her name nonstop.
Right. And, you know, it's funny because the streamer thing, I've seen, it's customary in Japanese wrestling to have the streamers.
Yeah.
And a Ring of Honor incorporated that. I know ECW did it a few times when Hayabusa came and Hakushi came over to ECW.
Michinoku Pro guys,
the Terry Boy and all those other guys. Yeah. But it's customary, but I've never seen this many streamers in a match, or in a couple of matches at one point, just covered. Like to the point where it's up to their knees, you know?
Yeah, they're buried in streamers.
Yeah, I've never seen that many streamers before.
And there's Shigusa in her samurai.
And outfit. A samurai garb. Yeah, I'll get into her other garb in the other match in a couple of minutes.
Yeah, it gets more extreme.
It gets more extreme. That's the best part, man. Honestly, Dave, I didn't like this. Here comes the streamers. I enjoyed the more I saw of the feud and then the press conference, and I'll get into that in a minute.
Yeah.
The more I saw of this, I enjoyed.
Yeah.
It
keeps getting better.
It does. I mentioned the streamers.
Shigusa holding the scissors.
Right. Now, here's the thing. And there's a chain that's prominent in a lot of this match with Matsumoto. And, like, you see, like, he sees all the streamers. I can't even get over that. So
it's like both of their teams are fucking in there to get the streamers out.
Right. Matsumoto borrowed a mask from one of the machines, I guess.
I guess she's supposed to be Crane U, but... I don't know what the purpose of this. Like, they have a fake Dump.
Yeah, I don't know.
And which is Karu Kage, one of the other members of Gokuaku Dome. But Dump, you know, pulls a 180. But the thing is, like, nobody really attacks anybody. And she's wearing this mask, and she takes it off.
Yeah.
But you know, it is what it is. And you know, Chigusa's getting on the mic soon to say, like, let's start this shit.
Yeah, there's a lot of shit talking too, and unfortunately, I don't speak Japanese.
Yeah,
but this is they sold this feud very well. These two individuals, you know, were very into what they were doing, and I appreciate that aspect of it. And right away, you know, Matsumoto is the aggressor going for the pillar to post with Nagayo again. This referee, too, man.
Jose Perez.
Who is this guy?
I tried doing some research on this guy. There's a lot of, you know, unbeknownst to me, there's a lot of Jose Perez's out there. So
yeah, well,
I couldn't get too much info on this guy. But you got a Japanese match going on with a referee of Hispanic descent.
Right. Well, she's got this chain, right? And I mentioned this in my notes. The ref's not even trying to take it from her, you know?
The refs in All Japan Women are very passive.
Yeah, obviously.
And one thing you'll notice in these matches, they just get the shit kicked out of them by these women. They don't.
Yeah.
They hardly put up, you know, any sort of defense to say, "Hey, I'm the referee." But no, like, you'll see in these matches, it's not uncommon for the referee to be bleeding as well as the women,
which we'll get into in a few minutes.
Oh, God.
Now the ringside area is covered with press and young girls.
Yeah.
Besides their entourage, I mean, both wrestlers had a pretty decent sized entourage.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of young girls now.
Yeah.
Now explain to some of our listeners what the young girls and young boys are.
Well, typically they're more or less like the students. Like they're the talent that's coming up. Like it's like for instance, Don't Pass Her Crew. You know, you got your Condor Saito and Crane Yu and all them who are not, you know, obviously not at the same level as Del Matsumoto, but, you know, they're learning. You
right.
know, this is, I guess you would say, you know, like students of like a Chikara Wrestle Factory or the ROH
right.
you know, school, you know. But in Japan, like, typically they'll be surrounding the ring watching, you know, their teachers, you know, go, because this is part of the learning process.
Right, and when the young girls periodically come in, and I notice this too, they wipe the ring down.
Yeah.
Like they do in the NBA when on the hardwood floor when the guys are sweating.
Oh, yeah.
The guys come in with the towel guys, you know?
Yeah, and that's like another thing with Japanese pro wrestling. You know, like the seconds, the young boys, like, you know, they take care of, you know, the person that, you know, their mentors, you know, like. Once the match is over, they're getting them water. They're getting them, like, the hot water bottles, all that kind of stuff, you know?
Right.
So it's, you know, there's a relationship. It's not just, you know, hey, watch my match and learn. There's a relationship there.
And I appreciate the busyness around the ring kind of bothered me.
Uh-huh.
But I like how everybody gets involved, like a lumberjill match when they take it to the floor.
Yeah.
You know?
It's kind of like maybe if you watch like Dragon Gate these days, like the seconds are constantly involved, especially with Dump's crew. They're constantly in the ring. Like if by any chance, like in this first match, like Chigusa hardly has any offense in this match.
Right.
Which makes it, you know, as good as it is, which makes these fucking kids go crazy for this match. But anytime Chigusa gets some sort of like offense, Dump's team is like immediately in the ring, like doing
right.
something to stop it, and it's like so blatant. It's like it's not, you know, it's there's, you know, it's not like I don't know, like WWF, where like a tag team partner would like sneakily, you know, do something. No, they're just like in there, stirring
right, yeah.
shit up, and the referee's like not doing anything.
That bothered me so much, and like to take it outside. At one point, I guess this happens in the next clip. Are we watching it and jumping ahead? Because I have all my notes written, and I mean, do we have time to watch the whole thing? Or we probably
do. We're not going to watch the whole thing, but we just summarize what's happening during all this.
Right. So, like I said, when the girl
dump with the fork. Oh my God.
Like, yep.
One of the things about these matches is these women are not afraid to bleed.
No. No, I think she had scissors at this point, right?
Oh, my God. There's a chain. There's a fork. There's scissors.
Yeah.
They're stabbed repeatedly in the head.
Yeah, and there's a garbage pail. At one point, Nagayo tries to cut her hair, and the ref finally goes, you know, does his job and removes the weapon. And
yeah.
And then Dump
to cut her hair during
right, the match. And then Dump gets the scissors back that the ref that doesn't even disregard and tries to, you know, jack her up, you know?
Yeah, like, this is, like, if I was a kid watching this, oh, my God, I would be, like, losing my shit because all the heinous stuff that happens during these matches is out of control.
Nagayo going for a clover leaf, and Matsumoto is now reversing it.
That's, so, like, another beauty of like, these matches. Like, literally any time Chigusa Nagayo gets the upper hand, like, immediately. The table is turned. Like, there is, like, no relief for this woman during any of these matches.
I like the fact that they go right to the basics. After killing each other with a fork or a knife or scissors, yeah. They go right back to the mat.
Yeah, they keep it simple.
Yeah, it's not just the constant garbage wrestling, you know,
no,
using weapons and shit, you know?
Like, every every single detail of these matches, especially this first one. This is like the crucial one. This like sets the stage for everything that's about to come later. They just keep it basic. They keep it simple. They listen to the audience. Something that's like totally missing from wrestling these days. You know, a lot of performers just, they don't listen to the audience, and that's exactly what these women do. And that's
right. So now Nagayo is being held by Bert DeFay, and
yeah, she's lost the match. She couldn't make the 10 counts. This dump is just beating the shit out of her this entire match.
Yeah, she lost by 10. She lost by
10 count.
Right.
She not a count out. She was in the ring. She just
it's 10 count, right?
She couldn't you know stand up for a 10 count and. Oh my God! We're watching the hair cutting now. Like literally, the fans are crying.
Yeah,
it's just, you know, nowadays, like to get like any sort of like good reaction from an audience member is tough. But in this, you have multiple people crying. Like the audience is absolutely sympathetic to Chigusa, and
right.
You know, majority of this audience is like teenage girls. So
yeah, no, they're crying in the audience. The clueless ref now starts cutting the hair, helping Dump in her case, right?
Yeah, because this fucking most, like, passive man on the...
Right.
Was it that one episode of Married with Children that they had Jerry... what the fuck is that guy's name? Why can't I remember his name? The guy who has the talk show that everybody's fighting each other on it.
Oh, Jerry Springer?
Jerry Springer.
Right.
But he was on an episode of Married with Children as the masculine feminist.
Yeah. Oh, go ahead, I'm sorry.
But this is insane. Like, you have both of these teams in here right now, and the heels are relentless. Chigusa's crying, just like her face is just covered in blood. The crimson mask. It gets worse as these matches go on. Like, her team members are trying to help her, and they're being held back, and they're crying.
Right. Yeah. So
this is like the most dramatic like ending to a match.
I hate this ref, by the way. Did I just mention that before? and the chain is still wrapped around Nagayo's neck. There are people screaming and crying in the crowd. Nagayo's crew being held down by the Dome as they struggle to help their fallen leader, who's getting scalped at this point.
Yeah. This is the passion of Chigusa Nagayo.
Yeah, and the crowd, like you said, Dave, the shots of the people screaming and crying is astounding for 86 anyway.
Yeah.
Now, and then Nagayo gets covered with a towel
and
heads off to the locker room.
You know, if people thought, like, you know, there's a lot of people that say, you know, Hulkamania is like, you know, like those crowds were just the craziest, and people try to, you know, you try to say your vampiros and stuff like that are the Hulk Hogans of, you know, Mexico or whatever, but... You know, like, to get this kind of reaction from a crowd is just one in a million. Like, I've never seen anything like this.
No. And, again, now I'm watching this for like, the second time, and I'm like, this is fantastic.
Yeah.
I mean, like, again, you sent me the first clip. I was like, women's
wrestling. And I'll go on record. This is probably my absolute favorite feud and probably my favorite match of all time.
Really?
Yeah.
Better than, like, Dusty and Tully, Flair and Race.
All of that.
Really? Hogan Orndorff? Really?
All that stuff.
Wow. That's awesome. Okay. Yes. Well, I'm glad we got to cover it. You know.
This is just everything that happens in this match just encompasses what I feel, you know, is what wrestling is all about.
This is what wrestling misses.
Yeah.
And there's been a lot of talk on the internet.
Look at that. All the Lioness Asuka, Devil Masami, just embracing her, just crying,
like selling it.
Yeah.
And you know, not to get away from what we're talking about today, but there's been a lot of talk on our page and some other pages on Facebook about the current products and what's going on. And I think this is the essence of pro wrestling.
Yeah.
This feud.
Got the Jumping Bomb Angels right there.
Yeah. You know, again, this is, needs to be appreciated.
Yeah.
Whether it's male, female, this is what, you know, you believed back then.
Yeah.
You know, they sold it, you know.
Yeah. And this is not easy stuff to sell. You know, just look at a lot of the personalities that we have in wrestling today. It's, you know, it's definitely not like how it used to be. And just from my experience, you know, dealing with pro wrestlers, you know, a lot of guys are just jaded, you know, and it's hard to bring out, you know, any sort of emotion sometimes. You know, you really got to get caught up in the moment. And this is just like one of those rare instances where everybody, including the talent, the audience, they're just feeling for Chigusa Nagayo in this match.
So and now,
Dump. First of all, let me say this about Dump.
I got some stuff to say about Dump too with the rematch, but go ahead.
You know, this is probably, in my opinion, this is also like the true essence of a heel. Like, there's matches where she'll come out with fucking swastikas,
yeah,
all over her, just like swastikas, like just painted on her face, on her clothing, like, you know, true like Sid Vicious style. Like, I don't give a shit.
Right. Yeah.
And we talked about this briefly last time I saw you, and I'm like, you know, one thing that's missing from wrestling is racism.
Because it was a sign of the times, dude. Yeah. Look, Ivan Koloff. Listen, before Undertaker was doing coffin matches,
yeah,
Ivan Koloff was doing it with Dusty Rhodes.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And Ivan Koloff was like the Cold War Russian, you know. I mean, even the Von Erichs, man, the dad, Fritz, had a Nazi gimmick.
Yeah.
It works. Stuff like that works. I mean, Sergeant Slaughter became an Iraqi sympathizer,
yeah,
you know, which we
threats, everything. But
yeah, man.
That brings out emotion out of people. But unfortunately, not too much for WrestleMania 7 for that turnout. But
you know what? You can still, you could disagree with me, but I'm a firm believer of, you could sell salt to a slug if you're that good. Like, you can book stuff like this today, even with breaking kayfabe, only because with the quality of television that's on now,
yeah,
you know, you're not insulting anybody's intelligence.
No.
You're entertaining people. And I think this is what pro wrestling needs. The stuff like this could still happen,
yeah,
if promoted properly.
Yeah. But I think it's definitely like a scary territory for a lot of people, just because you know, even though we all know wrestling is scripted and stuff like that, but, you know, still people identify with the wrestlers as, you know, who they are as people, you know. And we're at a point now where wrestlers are using their real names as, you know, as for their performance, you know, all that kind of stuff. So it's still, like, shaky territory, but it works.
Yeah, you know, in Mexico, too, man, like, we talked about, you mentioned El Santo and some other guys like Peto Aguayo and Dr. Wagner and guys
Blue
like that.
Demon.
Blue Demon. You know, those guys, now mind you, they were masked guys. They fought guys that you knew their regular names, but when they got to the arena, they were El Bendito Azul. You know, they were, yeah, the Cheetah Kid. They were Tiger Mask. They were some, you know.
Yeah.
Not everybody hit their gimmick. I'm sold that you can still do stuff like this on this level if promoted properly. I just don't think, you know, you're not insulting anybody's intelligence.
No.
So. All right, so now this was August.
Yeah.
We fast forward to the 7th of November, 1986.
Oh, we got to do the rematch.
The non-hair match for the All Pacific Women's Championship?
Yes.
All right, so this was in April.
Now, this is setting up for the hair versus hair rematch.
The rematch, right. So let's do that. And
there's Chigusa coming down the aisle with a freaking samurai sword. Fucking
right.
Katana blade.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable, right. So she's, again, and she looks the part, man.
And there's Dump just full
with her, like, with the silver samurai gear on,
like the helmet, the mask, and they're just pointing the swords at each other.
Yeah,
the sword to kendo stick, rather.
Yep.
This is some serious shit. Like, this is, you know, just when you couldn't think that you couldn't, you know, I don't want to say it's topping the other match, but it's just bringing up the intensity just to another level.
Yeah, this is April.
This is April 5th, 86.
86, right?
You know, this is like several months after the hair versus hair match.
Right. And again, this is the height of it. And you know, you can't get any meaner than Matsumoto.
Oh, check that out.
There it is. God. There it is.
Just the entire arena is now covered.
I've never seen that much. And I've seen, you show me stuff with Hanson and Andre, yeah, and Baba, and I've never seen that much streamers.
I've seen more than that, but that's a lot of streamers. Like, it just for those who, you know, can't see it right now but will see it, like,
yeah, we'll put it up.
We just saw all these streamers like fly into the ring at once. It was amazing. And this is not a small arena. It's a pretty big spot.
Now, did All Japan run in the dome and stuff like that? They or they had their own or Kurikan Hall or.
Well, this is definitely bigger than.
This is not a gymnasium.
No, this is not a gymnasium.
I know IWA and Wing and shit. They have.
They did do dome shows, I think, for like the Dream Slam shows, but that was like in the like early 90s.
In the 90s, so this was still. So this is like
Kira Hokuto. Although
this is like the Nassau Coliseum of Japan, like 15,000 seats, 12,000 seats, or whatever. Okay, but still packed.
Yeah.
Again, and Matsumoto starts every match the same way. Yeah. I'm going
to,
you know.
Well, this is not the same way. She's trying to put the kendo stick right in her eye.
She's using a weapon to open the match. That was my point.
Yeah, I've seen some matches where, oh, God. She just comes down to the ring just, like, literally hitting, like, stray people with the kendo stick in the front row.
Yeah.
And this is, like, no different. I think, like, she actually broke the kendo stick on this one or. Yeah, like this thing's fucking broken at this point.
Yeah, Matsumoto painted all over the place.
And she just has like this witch like tattoo, like a painting of a tattoo on her back, demons on her arms.
Right.
Just the intimidation factor that's like all dump right there. You know, like you would see like your Jesse Ventura's like slowly taking off the earrings and all this kind of stuff to intimidate their opponent. She's just like dyed hair, tattoos, swastikas, everything.
Right.
And keep in mind, you know, when All Japan Women is starting, and even, you know, for this match too, like, these women are, you know, coming out wearing, like, more or less, like, bathing suits.
Yeah, like the One Piece.
Yeah, like the One Piece, like.
Olympic.
Yeah, this kind of stuff. I think for this match, Chigusa's actually wearing, like, tights, you know, for this match. But, you know, it wasn't uncommon for these women just to come down in bathing suits, more or less, in One Piece.
Yeah. You know, and again, this is the height of a huge feud. So, like, you know, the atmosphere is the electricity is, you can cut it with a knife.
They want to see Chigusa get her revenge,
get her due. Yeah,
yeah.
And she was like a folk hero.
Yeah,
you know, she was big. You know, both combatants were pretty. Big.
You know, Dump had her own video game. Crush Gals had like
they had a band.
Yeah, they had a band. I don't know if they had number one records, but you know they were charting like pretty high.
This is something that you need to do some research on.
Yeah,
and get some and acquire some of this. For the
I need
show.
To buy some of the vinyl.
I would pick it up. Honestly, I'm actually.
I'll say this: I do like. I really like the Jumping Bomb Angel songs.
I got to get some of that stuff. I love the Jumpin' Bomb Angels. They were so good.
It actually, well, I don't know if you know this, but I know this. It's not there anymore, but, oh my God, I can't remember her name for shit, but the girl in the Jumpin' Bomb Angels that is not Norio Tateno had a sushi restaurant on St. Mark's.
No, she didn't.
She did.
I don't even eat sushi. I would just go there just because it was her.
Well, that was the thing. I didn't know that she had her own spot until, I don't know, it was like 2 or 3 years ago. It was called Go, and it was on St. Mark's.
I know exactly where that place is.
Yeah.
I used to go down a block to Coney Island High.
Yeah. And she had her own sushi restaurant, and if you went inside of there.
Was it Yamasaki? Itsuki Yamasaki?
Itsuki Yamasaki. She had her own sushi restaurant there. If you went inside. You would just see, like, a wall dedicated to all the Japanese wrestlers that came there to eat, you know, while they were on tour.
Oh, man.
And took a few women on dates there.
I'm sure you did.
I surely did, even though they didn't give a shit about wrestling.
They didn't care about wrestling.
But regardless, they're like, oh, that's cool. But food there was awesome. I wish it was still there. And I had the very fortunate honor of being invited to go there with... former WCW alumni and GEA representative Toshi Uematsu.
Right.
So I was lucky enough to be invited to have food there with her. And,
that's awesome.
I got to talk to Itsu Yamazuki, and I was like, you're part of the Jumping Bomb Angels. And she just looked at me, and she's like, I think I was. And then she walked off.
I think so, I was. It's not a big deal to them.
She totally no-sold it, but... Actually, I ran into her daughter not too, maybe like a year ago or so.
As Dunk beats Nagaya with an oil can.
Yeah.
After a double spike pile driver to Nagaya.
And her daughter was like, you know, it's, you know, just something that she did. And she doesn't like talking about it so much. Like, how could you not talk about this awesome stuff? This is great.
Yeah, you know, I don't know if people are humbled in different ways.
Yeah.
You know, but like I'm an EMT. Like, oh, you're such a hero. I'm really not, though. I'm doing my job. I mean, yeah. if you're a baker, you bake. If you're an EMT, you try to save a life, you know.
Yeah.
If you're a Japanese wrestler, you be the best Japanese wrestler you can be. But, I mean, I guess some people don't. Maybe they want to forget about it. Maybe it's something that they outgrew or, cause, you know.
Yeah.
You know how the business is so shady. Like, you know, you don't.
Yeah, it's, you know, everybody has their own experience. You know that I've done some awesome stuff, and you know, sometimes I just don't want to bother talking with it. I don't get into to details. It's kind of strange because I remember at a point, like I just like prayed and wished, you know, I could experience some of the stuff that I do. And now that I'm experiencing some of it, you know, sometimes it's just not a big deal. But when you're in there, you know, it's a completely different experience than when you're watching it. And like. Just us watching this, like, I'm marking out. I love this.
This is fantastic. And, you're about 8 minutes into a 15-minute match, and Nagayo, at one point, all these matches, she rarely has the upper hand. Because, like you said, she never gets to counter any of her moves or recover from anything.
Yeah,
you know?
Like, it's just... They're just so pandering to the crowd.
Yeah.
Because, like as soon as this match started, you already saw, like the teenage girls just, like, chanting and getting
crying
into it.
Crying in
like,
the crowd. It was crazy.
You know, it's, you know, guys now would pay some serious cash to get this kind of, like, reaction from a crowd. And it's,
yeah.
You know, and this just naturally just emanated from them. They just cared so much about Chigusa. And Dump was literally, like, the devil incarnate. In these matches.
Like, you get these indie promotions like Ring of Honor and PWG and Dragon Gate and, like, even PWS who can draw anywhere from 300 to 1,000 people. We've seen them draw 1,000 people. We were there. The thing is, even bringing old
people... Oh, my gosh. I just have to bring this up. She's just raking her face with a fork.
With a fork, yeah. She probably borrowed from Abdul the Butcher.
This is like, I think there's like a close-up of it later on during this match, but you see some tape on it, but, you know, the blunt end of the fork is not taped up. This is just like pure fork, and she's just raking her face like repeatedly with this fork.
It's insane.
And the referee's watching this all go down, too.
I hate this ref.
This ref is just as useless as the other ref. And... we'll probably cover it some like future stuff, like you know, going further with this. But Goku Ako Dome, like they had their own ref,
like their own Nick Patrick.
They had
like
their,
NWO
they,
had Nick
yeah,
Patrick.
They had their own NWO ref, and kind of similar. They did like the same thing in Dragon Gate USA, and not USA, but just a regular Dragon Gate. But they had their own ref, and this guy was like. Not only just as useless, but just did not give a shit, and he let even more stuff like go on.
Big splash on Nagayo as she like, bridges out.
You know, if you hate your refs, then you'll go absolutely livid while you're watching these matches.
Right? Yeah. It's just the abuse and the not caring is who would kill about these referees.
Yeah, you can even see with this ref, like he's just like hunched over. He's got his belly there.
But really, just quickly getting back to my point before,
yeah.
You know, those even bringing the old guys back in, they don't get that kind of reaction anymore.
No.
I don't think, even like, you know, I was watching Raw from last night, and like, you know, John Cena came back after how many months, and then like, he got that little bit of a pop, and that was it. It just doesn't happen anymore.
You get more of a reaction from people who don't like you.
Right.
As opposed to people who do like
you. No, you're absolutely right, partner. I think it's a sign of the times.
Yeah.
To be perfectly honest with you.
It's, you know, people are, I don't know, it's just a different time right now. People, you see more complaining than you see, you know, praising these
right.
days. And, you know, it's tough to please these audiences. And, you know, what's there to say? You know, these were simpler times. You know, I'm sure they were just, you know, as complicated as now. But, you know, just the fans just didn't know as much as they know now. They didn't have all this information at their beck and call. And And, you know, just back then you just got your ticket and you couldn't wait until the match came up.
I mean, I couldn't appreciate anything that was overseas until the 90s because I didn't have the power to tape trade until the magazines allowed the pen pal thing to open up.
Yeah.
You know,
Donable stretch on the floor.
On the floor.
This is one of the few opportunities Chigusa could get in a move.
You know, and again, Chigusa is the ultimate, ultimate face wrestler.
Yeah.
She looks the part, she plays the part, and she sells the part. As she now
Dumping Bull Nakano, tried to squash her, tried to squash Chigusa, and it didn't work out. And now
Dump is caught like Andre in the ropes.
Just like her wrists are caught in the ropes. Oh, Chigusa with the chair. And she's so weak that she could barely...
And she breaks the chair over Dump's head. Which means either Dump's got a big head or the chair wasn't made that much.
No.
That hard. So
that was like one of the cool things about Japanese chairs. Like the tables, like if you watch Botchamania, these tables don't break for shit. But
no. These
chairs, like the seats just pop right off. Oh my God. And here comes like Bull Nakano with like a giant like a radiation drum.
Yeah. That came right from the power plant.
And you got Condor Saito with her pink, like, zebra print shirt yelling at the ref.
Another fantastic wrestler, by the way.
Yeah.
I mean, all these chicks can go, Dave. That was the best part of it, too. They just weren't there for show. All the chicks in both factions can go, man.
Yeah, like when you watch a lot of these matches, these kind of matches are pure entertainment. You're seeing some wrestling here, but it's like she's just beating the hell out of her with this
drum,
with this radiation drum, steel drum.
Referee's just like, yeah, not counting, just putting his hand up.
Don't do that.
Please don't beat her with the drum.
And meanwhile, now, there's like Condor Saito and Bull Nakano and Dump now, just beating the shit out of her at the same time.
200 pounds of Dump and the drum now on top of 140 pound. Chigusa.
Now, I want to say this, you know, keep in mind, you know, not all these women are, like, magnificently beautiful, you know.
No.
Chigusa and the Crush gals, you know, they definitely look like dykes. So does Dump. But, you know, when you see them, like, they just, you know, have this look about them that, you know, they're still pretty young at this time. Like, I don't know how old they were at this point, but one thing, I don't know if you know this, but... Specifically, also, with All Japan Women, they had a retirement age. I think once they reached like 22, 23, I want to say maybe 26 at max. That was a retirement age. After that, you couldn't wrestle as a female anymore.
I didn't know that, but that's like Menudo, that Spanish band, Menudo, the boy band. Like when you hit like 17, when you
hit
you did three out. Same thing with this, huh?
Yeah.
Chigusa gets a very cheap victory.
Yeah,
with a terrible back suplex on Dump. Dump is now angry, doing the whole leather face thing where she's clearing the outside of the ring like Leatherface is doing in Japan.
Yeah, and she has a fresh kendo stick, and she's just beating the shit out of
all the young girls, beating them up with the kendo stick.
And she's not being easy on them. She's really going in with these hits.
Dude, she beats up her own people, the young girls, in a press conference. We'll get into that in a minute.
Yeah.
Chigusa
awarded the All-Pacific Women's Championship.
That's right.
And somehow is fortunate enough not to be covered in her own blood for this match.
Yeah, she's like, I didn't bleed as much.
Yeah.
So, you know, and again, a credit to them, a credit to the time. Fantastic. So now this is the coup de grace, as they say, the finale, the adieu. As the silly French say, this is November 7th, 1986. Dave painstakingly found this in five parts.
Yes.
And, all right, so the clip is going to open with a recap from August of 85.
Yeah.
Okay.
Where, you know, it shows you the original hair versus hair match.
Right. And Dave mentioned before the Crush gals were involved in, I guess they were the gem of Japan. They're truly outrageous. They had their own band, like Tiffany and all those bubblegum mall pop singers. Debbie Gibson. She's like Debbie Gibson of old Japan.
You know, they were hitting the charts. They had records. You could buy their records.
Right.
You could probably go on eBay right now and find some of them.
We should. We should get some for the. We should get some for the new studio.
Yes.
We'll hang them up on the wall. It'd be pretty fresh.
Frame them.
Absolutely. Now
there's Dump strutting as she. She literally like has like this hilarious strut.
Yeah.
She beats her for the first time.
Always does that.
Yeah.
You know, and
like it, the best way I could word it, it's a mix of Fred Sanford and just like. Just does not give a shit. Like it's so like in your face when she wins this match.
Yeah, no, it's awesome. And now like the entourage of Chigusa is now, you know, they show you the recap of them beating up on the ref.
Yeah.
How could you, and like now Chigusa's on a microphone screaming like, "Adrian, we did it," you know.
Yeah.
Even though she didn't do anything. Don't cut my hair.
What little hair I have in the first place.
Right, right. But so now they open up with this, and then there's a musical performance of some sort.
Yeah.
Now fast forward. Let's fast forward to that. There we go. From the September 10th of 86. Now she's in the ring, and she's doing a solo. And she's singing a little hard out. She's got the 80s Corey Hart gear on.
She's singing in English, too.
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah.
A little bit. And I guess they're putting the words up for karaoke. I don't know. Doesn't karaoke mean tone deaf in Japanese?
Something like that.
Okay, I just make sure. So she's singing. They got the words up. She's got the Corey Hart shirt on with the tie. She wears just
kind of like pop up video. These videos that I found. Well, the channel's called Double Miz. If you want to check out some awesome like Joshi pro wrest, which means women's wrestling in Japanese.
Yep.
Go to Double Miz. This is where I'm finding all this great stuff. And like a little pop-up video kind of stuff. If there's any sort of interesting facts or knowledge, like they kind of pop up on the screen.
Well, I got you for that. You're my pop-up video when it comes to the Joshi.
Yeah.
All right, so she's doing this musical performance, and you know something's going to happen. Like, you know that this can't finish well for her.
Yeah. I'll say this. When they did the musical performances, it was very rare when something bad would go wrong.
Right. Normally, normally it's just her singing in the crowd.
No, they're just
crazy.
Performing.
Right.
This is just part of the show. When they perform, they perform. You know, even funny enough, I'll just throw this out there. It's somewhere on the Double Miz channel, there is Medusa doing her own song.
Now, here comes Dump, and she ambushes Chigusa, and now she's cutting her outfit.
With scissors.
With a giant pair of shears. Not just regular shears. We're talking like the fabric ones that my wife uses when she makes little arts and crafts. And now both entourages are getting involved. The Alliance, Chigusa's crew.
Gokuwaku
Dome, right? Did I say that right?
Yeah.
Okay, good. So the Dome and...
I even have to work on saying that.
Yeah, Gokuwaku Dome and Chigusa's crew are now fighting off Dump as her ambush continues on Chigusa, and the streamers are there, and now it's, all right, we're going to jump you.
And just clotheslining the shit out of her.
Hit the lariat almost.
Clotheslining the friggin' skeleton out of her goddamn body.
Right, and then like now she's being carted off. Now this is the first time that an assault lasted less than 5 minutes.
She got off easy on this one. But still, you know, especially in Japan, if you have your clothes fucking ripped off, granted, she's like still wearing like, it seems like she's wearing like another suit and tie underneath it.
Yeah.
But like, still, like, that's like, it's embarrassing.
And you mentioned the camaraderie they had with these girls.
Yeah.
You could tell right now there's a bottle of water being dumped on the back of the neck of Chigusa as they go to the next clip, which is the big press conference.
A couple of days later, we have the press conference.
September 12th of 86. And this is the big press conference. Dump decided to bring her kendo stick, and she's telling the press, "Listen, this is what I got to do." Chigusa is not amused at all.
No,
as she got her shirt from Spencer's on.
Yeah,
right. And so now the big press conference. Now I want to point out. I don't know. Have you seen any of the Karate Kid movies after the first one?
Yeah, I saw a few of them.
Doesn't Dump Matsumoto look like fucking Sato? The old guy that Mr. Miyagi has to fight in the village.
Oh my god! That was the second one. I haven't seen that.
Miyagi.
I haven't seen it. So
I fight you. You disrespect my honor. Look at
it. I'll have to see if Netflix has Karate Kid 2 on. So
I'm going to bring up Sato. All
right.
Because you have to see. Because once you see him, you're like, oh yeah, Dump does look like Sato. They're probably related.
It's the second one there.
Sato. There he is. There's Sato. Sato. See?
Without the gray. Looks like Onita a bit.
Yeah, a little bit, but it looks like her without the gray hair.
Yeah, kind of.
Yeah. So I mean, there's Sato. There's Sato. So now she looks like Sato. And they show the contract.
Excuse is putting her, you know, John Yamasuki on it.
Yeah, it's John Hancock, if you guys didn't know who John Yamasuki was. Dave has to. See, Dave's the. Yeah, there's the contract.
And look at this contract. This is like some like calligraphy shit going on.
Yeah, it's a scroll. It's not.
Yeah, this is.
All right, so now, you know, of course, Dump shows the chair at Nagayo, and then. And they pull on each other's hair for a press photo, which is amazing. They stop for it. If you watch this, this is pretty funny. Now they go, but now
they got to be broken up.
They get broken up. Now.
Now.
Did they pull the hair yet? No. There they go. They're face to face. They're going to pull each other's hair for a press shot. There you go. Amazing. That's it.
Yeah.
Right? Now, here's something weird. Dump pulls out what looks like to be a Purdue chicken. Right?
Yeah, it is headless chicken.
It's not raw. A fake chicken. It's a raw chicken.
No, it's a raw chicken.
Right, and then she cuts the chicken and throws it at her, tossing the kendo stick at the media, like beating up the media with the kendo stick.
Yeah, saying this is you. This is what's going to be.
Look at this. This is insane. This is the best part of the entire feud.
Cuts it right open.
She cuts it right open. Do you understand? You'll be like this. Now, Google translates it for you. She's telling her, do you understand?
Yeah,
it'll be
and
like
just
this.
The shocked look on her face. Like, what the fuck is going on?
What are you doing? Why are you putting this raw chicken on me? Don't you know about salmonella?
Yeah. And now here, like, everybody just going right back at it. Full-blown riot ensuing. Got a little bit of edited version, so they're broken up now.
Right.
And there's Bull Nakano with her.
Right, but then there's Dump again, just beating up. Look, just throwing chairs at people. Like nobody cares, man. This is so cool.
Knocking over the camera stand.
I got to be honest. If a chick like that hit me with a chair, I'd probably punch her right in the face.
Yeah.
You know? But
everybody's just in awe.
And she's still rocking this chicken. And nobody's like, it's like.
Nobody's doing shit about
it. Yeah, nobody's doing anything. It's like, it's commonplace to walk around with a raw chicken, I guess, in this part of the world.
Well, I just think in this kind of instance, you know, it's kind of like, what the fuck is going on? And, you know, nobody's going to... If you got a chick coming out with a kendo stick and throwing chairs and stuff like that, I don't think most of these guys are... They're just not going to bother.
So the press conference ends with Chigusa picking up the chicken and walking away with it.
Hopefully eating it later.
Exactly.
Hey, you can't let a good chicken go to waste.
No. So now here we are. This is the match. November 7th, 1986.
Five parts. Five-part match. We'll try to. We got Dave coming on soon, so we'll do our best to go through this match, but not watch the entire match.
No, I gotta tell you, this is fantastic. Now, we mentioned the ring attire of both combatants, right? Before Nagayo comes out to like a Joan of Arc meets like Final Fantasy VII robe.
Pretty much.
You got to see this robe. It's fantastic. As soon as I saw it, I'm like, oh, this is fantastic. I got it. You know?
Yeah, this is just absolutely epic. Like, you can just see this thing for miles.
They pulled out all the stops.
Just like this, like, gold and purple banners waving in the air.
Yeah, once you master this language, because I know you're taking classes, once you master the language, you have to get one of these people who made the costumes up on.
And make you one.
and find out, like, I know, like, Ric Flair paid, like, $10,000 for his robes. Yeah. Those robes got to be, like, super expensive.
And she has a fucking samurai sword again.
Again, and they all look nervous. Look at a homegirl. She's like, this is crazy.
Yeah.
I can't believe this is happening. Please don't cut me with that sword.
Yeah.
All right, so...
Plus, to build up to another hair versus hair match, like, this is, you know, first of all, to even get what these girls get in the first place is just, by today's standards, it's an absolute miracle.
Right.
So, to try to capture that magic again, to quote, you know, JR, to get lightning in a bottle one more time,
Well, they,
this is just not easy.
No, you know what though? It was for them because they had the crowd's attention for like a couple of years.
Yeah.
This wasn't like a thing where they just pulled out this feud and like, all right, we're good. This was a 2 year thing.
Yeah.
85 and 86.
Yeah.
It was them, and that was it. You know. And I thought that was well done. You know.
Here comes Dump, looking like Big Mama from GLOW.
That's right. Dump comes out. She's got that Midnight Express-ish 80s disco music, rocking the sick face paint, slapping the crowd with her kendo stick, wearing a heavy metal t-shirt.
It's like a friggin', like, every color of the rainbow on her mohawk.
Right.
They got this giant banner with a skull and crossbones.
That's their logo, obviously. We saw it before.
Like Goku Aku Dome. Goku Aku
Dome flag, which I think every crew should have one of those.
Yeah, This is just insane. Like, they have the crowd in the palm of their hands.
Yeah, right. So now...
now they're pointing the sword. They're crossing their swords.
They're crossing their swords. Same stupid ref now is back.
Jose Perez is residing as ref.
Yeah. Fucking...
As useless as ever.
As many people as there are in Japan. Was it one... It's one American every 20 Japanese people? Mm-hmm. That's how many people there are now?
You probably would think more than that.
Now, yeah. You would think they would, you know, at least try to get somebody else.
Well, first of all, Hispanic in Japan. Like, when I was in Japan, like, you rarely saw anybody that wasn't Japanese. It was like, if you saw a white person, it was like, wow, I saw my one white person for the day. Okay.
Yeah. And you're like, you know, it's, I'm sure it's a culture shock. He's probably an experienced guy. He's probably been there for a minute, but... Probably even wrestled there.
But that's the beauty of these matches, that the ref was just absolutely fucking useless.
A clueless putz, yeah. He was definitely a clueless putz.
Just, oh my God, like the sword that Dump Matsumoto has for this match, it's just, it's like a friggin' Arabian Nights, like giant, like, thick sword.
Yeah. You know, I didn't think, again, man, like, just everything, the costumes, the flags, the talent, the pageantry, just, you know, the streamers. Just, it's fantastic.
Yeah. Macho Man has nothing on these robes.
No, man. Ric Flair, Macho Man.
Ric Flair has nothing on these robes.
None of these guys do, man. None of these guys do. But, you know, so... All right, so she still has the chain.
Yeah.
Dump has the chain. She's not... Let's get right into it.
For the final... Final match between
them. Right. We'll get right into it. So, you know, the same stupid ref.
She's clearly putting the chain in her tights, and the ref is just standing there.
He's looking right at her. Right. After seven matches, Chigusa is finally like, you know what? I'm not going to fight until this crazy bitch gets the chain out of the ring. And now she's drinking some kind of spring water from a blue bottle, wrapping the chain up. Again, Goose is like, look, come on, ref, what are you doing?
Yeah.
You know?
And she's putting her hand out. Oh,
and she just spits whatever she drank in the face, yeah. And the ref's like, now the ref, after five matches, he's like, oh, now you have to get rid of the chain. Now it's okay.
Yeah. Oh, no. Chain's still there.
No, I have the chain, and I also have a sword. And Goose is like, you know what, I'm so mad. And now she beats up on
the
ref.
Now she's just beating the shit out of
her. And now Dump beats the ref.
And there's like five other people getting into the ring. Ref is doing nothing.
And bludgeons the ref with the chain and bloodies him up. And now both teams are getting involved again. The young girls are wiping the ring down over there on the side there, doing a really good job so Chigusa doesn't slip on her soon-to-be crimson mask.
And just beating the shit out of the referee, having their own match before this is even started. Yeah, ref is, crimson mask.
Yeah, ref is busted open now.
He's juicing.
Right. He's definitely juicing.
He's just looking at his own blood, asking for a little towel.
He's asking for a towel. They're actually going to gauze his head, believe it or not. There's the crack medical staff that is Old Japan. Chigusa is getting on the mic going, listen, get this crazy bitch's stuff out of the ring or I'm not fighting no more.
She's just whipping the fucking chain around on the ring.
Yeah, now all the shit talking.
This is gang warfare. This is not just a Pier 6 brawl.
Suit and tie dude at ringside gets on a mic and like, yeah, get rid of the chain.
Yeah.
The ref who's now just got a bandage, now gets the bandage removed as Dump beats him more again. Now he's like, now the ref is like, I'm done with you beating me up. I'm done with you. And now there's an official at ringside on the microphone. He's like, listen, this is insane. All you guys are crazy. Let's get this shit going because it's not cool. So, and now it's the chain is out of the ring, right?
Yeah. The bell's finally ringing.
The bell's finally ringing after 3.5 minutes of nonsense. They're face to face. And here we go.
Immediately, Irish whips her and just bludgeons her with her entire body and goes for the pin.
Yep. Oh, and again, that kick out bridge that she does.
Yeah.
She just doesn't kick out, she does a bridge.
Oh, this is just like standard, you know, how Joshis do it. They don't just kick out, they bridge out.
Yeah, just to show you
which is pretty good, because I've been incorporating bridges into my workout, and it just fucking sucks. Especially when you try to get onto your forehead and bridge. Oh, God.
But she's bridging 200 pounds.
She's bridging 200 pounds off of her.
Right, right, exactly. So, you know, now Dump is gonna choke Nagayo with the dull end of her sword. That's going to happen in a couple of seconds.
Yeah, this is just when you don't think it gets crazy enough. You know, she's just stabbing her with a fork, stabbing her with scissors. Now she's pulling out the fucking sword to her throat
and
choking her with it. Granted, it's the dull end of it, but still.
But still, like, it looks insane. It's not even fair that, you know, like, it's – you watch it and you're like, Jesus Christ, I you know. She's like – and now the ref is yelling at her like, yeah, I know.
Yeah, just being a complete waste of flesh and bone.
Yeah, again,
checking her, not even looking in the right places, looking up her shirt.
Looking up her shirt and getting away with it.
Yeah. Granted, she's wearing, you know, like a singlet underneath.
But still, it's nobody wants to see that, especially in the ring.
You know. And not from a woman named Dump.
Right, exactly.
But still, like, just as much as the other matches, she's just, you know, granted, you're getting like a few wrestling holds here and there, but it's just an assault. It's just a physical assault. Like, she is just stabbing her at every chance that she gets.
Right. All right, so now Dump is...
You know, I'll even throw this out there. I'll, you know, well...
Dump hits the pile driver.
Do a little giveaway for this. If you can write down all the weapons that are used in all three of these matches, you know, I'll burn some of this stuff for you, mail it out to you.
Yeah. Yeah, watch the matches and give me a, like, you know, I thought one thing was a garbage can, but it wasn't. there was one, I think. I'm not sure, but anyway.
After a while, just throwing random shit,
like just like stuff they brought down. You know, a ref getting beat up again. This ref is terrible.
And it looks like he's crying.
Well, he is like, crying. He's getting beat up by a woman.
Yeah.
And let's be honest, nobody wants. If you're a man, you don't want to get beat up by a woman. Chigusa now getting upper hand.
Though granted, if you get beat up by Dump Matsumoto, that's kind of like an honor.
For us anyway.
Yeah.
Flying drop kick by Chigusa.
It's not just a fetish, it's an honor.
It's not just a fetish, right. So, now, at one point in the match, now Chigusa's like, I can't believe. I think Chigusa's really busted open. Her nose is bloodied. It's not the fake blood. It's the real blood. Her nose is legit busted at this point.
Yeah.
And now they make their way outside. And there's the sword.
Yeah.
There's the sword.
Just at the mercy of Gokuaku Dome.
Right. And the flash photography that's going on is...
Yeah, the press is ridiculous. The press is like up in everybody's face. It's press in Japan, if you think it's bad in America, oh my God. Your paparazzi and what have you. But Dump is just absolutely dominant on this, and now she's got the fork, like, just stabbed her throat with the fork. Oh my God.
Yeah, that's Abdullah's fork, actually. Yeah. Taped up the same way.
Yeah, but the prongs at the end are open. And she is just, like, driving this into her. Like, you know, I don't know if any of our fans are squeamish, but you'll see some sick shit in these matches. Like, what the fuck are they
doing? I know. And it's...
Like,
it,
like, listen, you know, I know there's a lot of guys out there, you know, as you stated earlier, they just ain't into women's wrestling. But this is just, you know, this Japanese women's wrestling, the Joshi Pro Wrestling, this just shows how ruthless women can be. You know, we all know women are like the hellspawn of the earth at times, but this really like shows it, like, absolutely. If you're gonna give women's wrestling a chance, it has to be Japanese Joshi Pro Wrestling.
Yeah, the work rate alone, not with these specialty matches, just the work rate alone is incredible.
I'll even go on record in saying some of the Joshi matches are way better than the men's matches. Not just American, but even Japanese.
Yeah, no, that's a fair statement. You know, yeah. That's a very fair statement. It's an acquired taste. If you're a big fan of the pyrotechnics and the bullshit, then really don't watch it. If you're a pro wrestling purist, you're a fan like us, then you would definitely appreciate the work rate and the talent that comes out of Joshi and even just Japan in a whole. So.
Yeah, this is just these matches, just, you know, especially this time in general, it was just a completely different beast, different animal altogether. Like, you know, when you watch some of the, just the regular matches, just the work rate is, you know, even better than, I would say, like, JCP, you know, Jim Crockett Promotions, NWA era, you know, style of wrestling. Like, it's just so well thought out. Like, a lot of these girls just don't. Every move that they make is not a wasted moment.
Right.
Like, you know, even, you know, as we discussed before, coming on the air for this, I wrote fucking, like, my notes for this are, like, everything that's happening during this match.
Dude, I took 4 pages of notes, man.
I'm looking at it. It's just, like, both of our notes are just, like, they're books.
I watched it, and then after, like, the second clip, I was like, okay, I'm sold. Like, I wasn't really into this the first couple of minutes. Yeah. And then, like, you know, as it progressed, I was like, this is something that definitely needs to be covered and definitely appreciated as a old school wrestling fan.
Yeah, this is, you know, for a show like this, you know, the throwbacks, I just don't think it's on a lot of people's radars. And, you know, just the fact that it's women's pro wrestling, it's, you know, it's a hard watch for some people, but this will completely change a lot of people's minds. And I hope people that are listening to this show, you know, we're really... really sink their teeth into this. Beautiful stuff.
We definitely have some good, knowledgeable fans, so hopefully they'll take heed to our advice. And
yeah, they'll eat it up. I know.
Yeah,
it.
Dave's gonna put this on. Dave will put this all on both pages yet later on.
Yeah.
Because again, it's good stuff. I'm actually gonna jump to the last couple of minutes here because we gotta
get ready for Dave.
We gotta get ready for Mr. Millican coming up here on this. Bonus episode edition of the Turnbuckle Throwback Wrestling Podcast. You're getting a throwback and you're getting a crazy interview at the same time. Dump is now using the fork close up.
And I know Dave does some Japanese belts too. So.
You should ask him that, man. You should definitely ask him about.
Yeah.
You know, we have to pick Mr. Millican's brain.
I think Jumping Mom Angel just got stabbed with a fork in the eye. And oh my God, Chigusa's
bleeding in the hand, the nose, the head.
She's just like a fountain right now.
Yeah, she bleeds like a stout pig.
Yeah. Again, these women are not afraid at all to.
And still hits the Enziguri. Yeah.
And she hits the Enziguri. Because I know even Bowman from Shining Wizards will say this. I burned him some stuff, and one of them included a Aja Kong versus Bull Nakano in a cage match. And, again, just these women love their scissors and just stabbing each other with them.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. It's just – this is just absolute gore at this point.
Right. So Dump still has no authority. Beats on a ref after, you know, again. She has the upper hand with the fork and the other apparatus. She goes for a big splash. Nagayo kicks out of that. That's the first kick out, actually.
Yeah.
That wasn't a bridge.
Yeah.
Several splashes, suplexes, crazy.
And I'll say this about these matches, you know, granted, when you see these, you know, one-sided kind of contests, even like nowadays, it's kind of like, you know, some people just don't know what to do in the meantime. And just, you know, everything is so significant. Like every, you know, move, every stabbing every stab is just phenomenal. Like it's not boring, which is just baffles me. I've watched these matches several times, and it's like the first time every time. It's like not boring. It's not trite. It's not redundant. Right. Even the redundant stuff is just like, oh my god.
Yeah, absolutely.
Doing it again. I can't believe she's going back to that.
Yeah, absolutely. It's again, and it was just so well done, you know. And I know I said that a few times during the show right now, but you know, let's fast forward a little bit.
And just watching Chigusa just struggle to do anything at this point, like she's try to roll her up in a schoolboy, and it's just like no energy is left in her whatsoever. And that's actually how she wins. She actually pulls a.
It's funny because she gets now. Let's get right to it. Chigusa just out of nowhere rolls up Matsumoto for a schoolboy and gets the win. After all of that, so I was a lackluster finish.
Well, this is the thing. For that finish, it was kind of resembling the first match where she was down and out. The ref is going for the 10 count. You got the same ref, possibly the same ending. And while Dump is celebrating, Chigusa's just like, fuck this shit, and just rolls her up.
Yeah.
It gets the 3 count, and the poor ref is just getting tossed around right now. And
yeah.
It's just absolute anarchy. Like, for the first match, it was anarchy too, but now that the heels, the Gokuaku Dome, are on the losing end of things,
yeah,
it's just fucking chaos. Now the ref is just...
Yeah, Dump has still no regard for authority. You know, she beats on the ref after the pinfall as the rest of the stable comes in. Dump then drinks again from that liquid glass bottle, spitting it in Nagayo, who's a bloody mess at this point.
Yeah.
And then Dump sits in a chair with her arms crossed.
Like, first of all, she walks out.
Yeah, she walks out, then she comes back in. So...
And Chigusa's, calling her back, saying, you fucking lost, be honorable, take the loss, and have your head shaved.
Yeah, have your head shaved, as she rocks the...
Got like a giant, hotel red towel.
The hotel red towel, yeah.
Like a big-ass towel, probably was white before.
Right, from the Tokyo Marriott.
Yeah.
So Dump comes back with the crew, she's got the kendo stick. And I'm a little disappointed too in this thing here. So now, she goes right back after Chigusa, drinks from that bottle again, spits in her face.
She has her in the corner.
In the corner.
Chigusa's just cowering at her, and like all the seconds of Jumping Bomb Angels, Devil Masami's trying to pull her back. But to... I got to say, for this, maybe that's why you're like a little bit disappointed, but this was, even though Dump lost the match, she won the war.
Yeah, she won the war. I mean, she won the war, but...
The fans got what they wanted. They got a solid Chigusa victory. Dump sits down. She has her mohawk cut off.
That's the thing, just the mohawk.
Well, the rest of her head
the
is kind
of
shaved.
Head is kind of shaved, yeah, but...
But I guess when you got a mohawk like that, you tend to pride... the kind of work that's been put into that.
Yeah, so now she's also on the mic now, and she's shit-talking. She sits in the ring, she crosses her arms, and the ref starts to cut her hair. So, and that's pretty much the end of the feud.
Yeah.
Because, how things progress was this was coming close to their retirement time.
You only
had a couple more years in
the
business.
Yeah, you're 22, you got to retire now.
Yeah, you got to start that Menudo band or something
like
that.
Yeah, exactly.
And there you have it, Dave. Chigusa Nagayo, Dump Matsumoto, the epic feud that was 1985-86.
Epic is an understatement for this kind of feud. Oh, my God.
Yeah, has it ever happened like that before ever again? Like with male wrestlers out there, or was that it?
It's kind of hard to say, just offhand, I can't recall anything where, the fans were that into it or the participants were that into it. It's, for me, that's as crazy as I've ever seen it get, in the world, as far as pro wrestling goes. You have your audience crying. Everybody's crying. Your friggin' teammates are crying. It's... it was this feud was just unreal. You know, for something like this to ever happen again, you know, I'm sure it will. You know, there's no doubt about it. You know, it's just how life is. But anytime soon, I don't think so.
I was very impressed. Honestly, this was a great find, brother.
Yeah, you'll probably have to see a man literally dying in the ring for the audience to get that, you know, react like that. But this was just pure, you know, pure kayfabe, pure wrestling.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. I like Japanese wrestling.
We'll ask Dave Milliken if he's seen this match. He's not too busy making belts 24/7.
Right, exactly.
So I'm sure that, you know, I don't know too much about belt making, but I know these guys are busy.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely, and he's done it all. So
yeah.
He's done it all.
He's
the ace of belts. Dave Millican's coming up next. This was our throwback of the week, and Dave and I will be right back. We're going to pay some bills.
Yeah.
And plug all our friends.
And I got to find my water. I think I left it in the bathroom.
Dave left his water in the bathroom. All right, we'll be back in a few minutes with the ace of belts himself, the man, the myth, the legend, Mr. Dave Millican. You're listening to the Turnbuckle Throwbacks Wrestling Podcast, swn.shiningwizards.com, and all that good stuff. We'll be right back.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
This is the Black Scorpion. And when I'm not looking for Sting or Tickles, I'm listening to the Shining Wizards Network. ShiningWizards.com. Be a mark. Buy the shirt. I'm coming for you, Sting. And Tickles, too.
What's up, kids? Big Phil here from the Turnbuckle Throwbacks Wrestling Podcast. When you're done with our show, head back over to the network and check out Pro Wrestling 101. That's right, Pro Wrestling 101 with Justin Credible. It's a show about the ins and outs of pro wrestling, hosted by a 20-year veteran of the sport, hardcore icon Justin Credible. Now, that's not just the best. That's not just the coolest. That's Justin Credible, exclusively on the Shining Wizards Network. What's up, kids? Big Phil here from the Turnbuckle Throwbacks Wrestling Podcast. As soon as you're done with our podcast, head back over to the Shining Wizards Network for 2.5 Wrestlers. Two professional wrestlers, Pat Buck and Kevin Matthews. Oh, and that other guy, Jay Silva. They give you their insight to a wonderful yet corrupt industry of professional wrestling. So join the bad boys of podcasting, 2.5 Wrestlers, exclusively on the Shining Wizards Network, swn.shiningwizards.com. The Neckbreaker Podcast! The Neckbreaker Podcast is a pro wrestling and heavy metal themed podcast. Guest interviews, wrestling headlines, and metal news, while hosts Brian and John get completely friggin' shit-faced. Past guests include Eric Bischoff, Fit for an Autopsy, Power Glove, and many, many more. So head on over to Shining Wizards Network, swn.shiningwizards.com, and check out The Neckbreaker Podcast! Hey guys, it's your boy, the Impact Player, Mr. Phil Rea from the Turnbuckle Throwbacks Wrestling Podcast. As soon as you're done with our podcast, head back over to swn.shiningwizards.com and check out my boys, The Midnight Jury. Mike and Adam host The Midnight Jury. It's a podcast that transports you back to the last old school generation. They debate in detail 80s and 90s pro wrestling, horror movies, and pop culture. Before the internet, before Blu-ray, and even before cell phones, there was the last old school, my old school generation. Check out my boys at The Midnight Jury. You won't regret it. They're pretty awesome.
Awesome.
Hey, it's Big Phil from the Turnbuckle Throwbacks Wrestling Podcast. Check out my crew, the Fallen Angels. The Gideon Triplets, Kanzer, Krim, and Dante bring you the inside stories of pro wrestling. With over a decade of experience in the business, they bring a wealth of knowledge. Well, if they're getting along, for long enough to share it. Check out the Fallen Angels exclusively on the Shining Wizards Network, swn.shiningwizards.com. Hey, Big Phil here from the Turnbuckle Throwbacks Wrestling Podcast. When you're done with this podcast, head back over and check out my buddy from the north, Apex Radio, featuring the Stickman. Canadian wrestling fan and photographer Stickman has made a triumphant return to podcasting, bringing not only his perspective from north of the border, but also his unique brand of humor. If you find that amusing, eh? Check out my buddy Stickman exclusively on the Shining Wizards Network, swn.shiningwizards.com.
Loaded. It's the Four Arms and Funk Radio Spectacular, featuring the Wolfman Jack Foley. Along with the Stickman comes his longtime friend and compatriot from the north, the fantastic friend himself, the Wolfman Jack Foley. He will not only give you the business about the business, but he'll also be serving up a heaping plate of funk, baby. That's right, heaping plates of funk, exclusively on the Shining Wizards Network. swn.shiningwizards.com. Oh, Lord, that's funky.
Hey, guys, Big Phil here from the Turnbuckle Throwbacks Wrestling Podcast. Check out my two boys, Chris Espo, Will Sweeney, the gurus of the gridiron, Tattoos and Touchdowns. Live every Sunday exclusively on MoleBackRadio.com from 10 a.m. to noon. For all your insight, spot-on predictions, and quite honestly, a move before the bookie calls you, go to Tattoos and Touchdowns. Every Sunday, exclusively on MoleBackRadio.com. Hey guys, Big Phil here from the Turnbuckle Throwbacks Wrestling Podcast. As soon as you're done with our show, head on over to RantemRadio.com, RantemRaidio, RantemRadio.com, where you'll hear the rant every Tuesday, the wrestling call-in show every Saturday, and you have What Are You Reading? For all your sports and entertainment needs, head on over to RantemRadio.com. Those guys are awesome. And of course, you can listen to the Turnbuckle Throwbacks in their rotation as well every week, exclusively on RantemRadio.com. All right, ladies and gentlemen, joining us today on the Turnbuckle Throwbacks Wrestling Podcast is a actual real treat for Dave and I.
Yeah,
this is we've been talking about this for a very long time. We're glad to have him on. He is the ace of belts, the man, the myth, the legend, Mr. Dave Millican. Dave, Phil Ray, Dave Powers, how are you?
Very, very good. Great to be here. Thanks for having me on, guys.
So, you know, the legend that is the belt making, I know the website DaveMillicantBelts.com, you know, there's a frequently asked question page, and you know, but I want to hear from you. How did you get started in the business? How did you start making belts? And Tell everybody, tell our newer listeners.
And why do you love belts?
And why do you love them?
Yeah, well, I think to get started with why, I think, I mean, it's pretty simple. Really, my big brother was a wrestling fan. We were growing up in the 70s, and so, I mean, you know, there wasn't a lot to do on Saturday mornings. You know, you get cartoons, you get wrestling, and that was it. And, you know, for years, I didn't pay any attention to the belts. And just one minute, actually, this goes into, like, probably very early 80s. And my brother was out of the house, and I was kind of, you know, it was on me. And I was in and out of wrestling, and I clicked it up one morning, and there was a feud between, of course, I'm just outside of Memphis, Tennessee. So there was a feud between Jerry Lawler and Zeb Coulter, a.k.a. Dutch Mantel, going on over the Southern Heavyweight belt. And that thing caught my eye, and that really sparked the interest, and it grew from there. As far as getting into it, really, we didn't have a lot to work with. So I started making belts. I was looking around. I was cutting up cardboard boxes and pieces of I remember one time I had the aluminum flashing. I was cutting up, like it's used on, you know, different construction stuff, and I was cutting up aluminum flashing just so I'd have something shiny to work with. And, you know, over the years, the materials got a lot better, and the work got a lot better. Started kind of making them for some of the local indie groups and that sort of thing. And the name that kept coming back over and over again was Reggie Parks. Reggie Parks makes the best belts in the world. So I kept asking people, and I couldn't believe. Of course, you know, there was no real internet at the time to jump on and just find Reggie Parks. So I couldn't believe how many guys would kayfabe you on getting in touch with Reggie Parks. And finally, I was able to get the number, ordered my first Reggie belt, as we call them. And in the course of that conversation, I started telling him that I make my own belts, and they were nothing like the caliber of his, which was the truth. You know, he said, well, why don't you make them like I make them? I would love to. I had, you know, and so those conversations continued, and he kind of held my hand, so to speak, through the process at first, and from there it just grew until you know. And then, of course, the internet. When the internet took off, then it was much bigger business for Reggie and for me. So, and it's just grown from there.
Now, what was the belt that you actually had made from Reggie Parks that you got from him? Kind of curious about that.
You know, it was a bit of a customized version of the Kurt Hennig Jerry Lawler AWA World Belt.
Oh wow!
And Reggie actually kind of customized a little more than I expected, but I still I wasn't disappointed to have it. And as a matter of fact, in the mid '90s, I actually traded that off to Jerry. And worked a pretty sweet deal for myself at the time, and got a hold of the AWA ring used world belt.
Oh wow!
Because it had been beat up pretty bad at that point, and there all they saw was, "Hey, this is a new shiny belt we can use." And you know, it was just one of those things that over time it got away from me. And thanks to a good friend of mine who was a prominent guy in the wrestling business, I was able to get it back just a few months ago. So I have back in my possession my very first Reggie belt, the first belt Reggie ever made for
oh,
me.
Wow.
And that's pretty cool for me to have back, and I don't intend to let it go again.
Absolutely. So now Dave, now let me get this straight. Now, the promotions come to you guys for the designs, or do you guys pitch your designs to the promotions? How does that work?
Well, we don't really solicit them. We're very fortunate to stay very busy, so they come to us. But as far as designs go, I mean, sometimes they already know what they want, or at least have an idea. Sometimes they'll even actually bring artwork to us that we'll convert and make, you know, usable for our processes and make the belt from. But I work with, I guess, man, probably, 12, 13, 14 years ago, something like that, a guy named Rico Mann came to us, and he said, I design this type of artwork, I can do this, and he started doing custom stuff. So Rico has actually become a full-fledged business partner, and Rico does our custom artwork. And sometimes if a company said, definitely know they want, they'll just come to us, they'll have an idea, and then Rico will come up with something and work with them until they're happy with it.
Now, we had like a little discussion amongst some of our listeners about this not too long ago, but there was a belt Hogan had, I believe it was 86, was it, Phil?
Yes, 86.
When he was feuding with Paul Orndorff, and I think this belt must have been used like three times. I think one of our listeners actually reached out to you about this. Can you go into a little detail about this like mystery belt that Hogan had for that brief time?
Well, I really wish I could. It is just that. It is a mystery belt. Reggie, you know, out of all the years and years that Reggie made belts, Reggie doesn't really even remember the belt. And I've talked again with Reggie, and I've talked with several people. And as a matter of fact, because of how several people at WWE and how that works is, because WWE is, you know, such a big company, then I've had them and people in different departments that didn't know I was already talking to other people there reach out to me and say, hey, what do you know about this belt? The truth is, nobody knows, and nobody knows why it didn't last, why it disappeared so quickly. I mean, we don't know if it was stolen, if there was just something Hogan didn't like about it. We really don't know, and I don't know that we'll ever get a straight answer on it and why, you know, why it went away. You know, it's a really nice-looking belt. I actually personally like it better than I like the 86, 87 belt that he ended up using for the long haul over those couple of years. I wish I could help. It's one of those times I hate to say that I'm letting you down, but I'm letting you down because I don't know.
Hey, it's quite all right. It kind of looks like, what was it, the NWA six-man belt?
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah, it was very, very, the artwork was different, but the shape was definitely like those.
I heard something about like they had Hogan, a picture of Hogan's face on the belt. Can you confirm that?
Yeah, well, we couldn't tell that at first, and then WWE came up out of the archives with that, you know, one of those great in-ring shots where you could tell that that's what it was. A lot of people think that that's just a picture glued on there or something, and I'm pretty sure that was just that was part of the engraving. It was just a very shallow, we call it a screen, of Hogan's face on there that was probably replaceable, because we found the original artwork for that belt. We do have it.
Okay.
And there's an oval there that's just blank, and when we come across that like that on our artwork, that means there was a relief piece there, an added-on piece. And that added-on piece was the oval that had the screen of Hogan's face on it.
Awesome. Now, Dave, you mentioned Rico Mann, you mentioned Reggie Parks. Talk about Joe Marshall and his designs. Are you guys all... networking is, are you guys still like working together?
No, Joe and I don't talk. I don't have anything personal against Joe. He's taken a few little shots at me on the internet when I started getting the lion's share of the WWE stuff, and I guess that was to be expected. I don't know. We actually probably 20 years ago we were friends, and I don't know, just along the way business and things get in the way of that. I don't have, if he called me right now, I'd talk to him. I don't have, animosity toward him as far as, not being interested in talking to him or that kind of thing. But no, we don't stay in touch. We don't communicate. And, that's just kind of how it is. And he had, it's just, nobody stays the golden boy in a position like that forever. And I guess he just, got kind of complacent and reached a point where, some things come up in his life where he couldn't deliver the work anymore. And, you know, that's that. But no, we don't stay in touch. I do, you know, the community in general, the legit belt makers, as I call them, I actually do stay in touch with those guys. They can come to me for things. I go to them for things. We talk, and, there's only a couple of us, so it's a pretty small community.
Yeah, well, that was my next point I was going to bring up. There's not many of you guys around that do this phenomenal task of making these elaborate belts for the wrestlers, man. I would think that... You know, you might want to, you know, keep in contact and have a good relationship with some of these guys. And I guess, like you said, he was kind of bitter and stuff like that. So, I mean, it's each his own, I guess.
Right, exactly. And, while I do, you know, as I said, the lion's share of the WWE stuff, I mean, there's a good guy, Andrew Lasargic, out of Pennsylvania, and he does the U.S. title for him. The I think, if I'm not mistaken, and off the top of my head, the only J-Mar holdover is the Divas belt. And they had asked me a couple of years ago, could I make one of those? And I said, I can. I'd rather we do something different, but I can do it if you want me to. But that's not come about yet, and I'm okay with that. But yeah, the you know, there's so many guys out there that are not legit, and so many people will pull up a website or a Facebook page and they're not legit, and they'll get these, you know, knockoff plates from Pakistan, and they'll call themselves belt makers, and just, and sometimes, and what happens is they get a little money in their pocket, and those Facebook pages go away, and then they never deliver stuff, and, you know, or they deliver pretty crappy looking stuff. And it gives us all a bad name, but I mean, there's no way you're ever going to stop it, and so, it's a bitter pill to swallow, but it is one that we just have to deal with.
Now this goes back to the IC title design, right? Now, can you talk about that, or do you want to talk about that?
Sure.
I mean, like, now whose design was it? I mean, whose idea was it? I mean, how did that come about? Because there's so many stories, and a buddy Tony from the Shining Wizards, and he was like, you have to ask him. I said, and we all want to know anyway, because we're all, I mean, I'm almost 40, Tony's almost 40, so, I mean, we're not that much, you know, younger than you guys are, but how is it,
still want belts.
Yeah, well, of course we still want belts, but like, do you want to talk about the IC title thing, or, I mean, is it?
No, I can tell you. Are you talking about the bringing it back? Is that what you're talking about?
Well, yeah, they brought it back, and it was like, well,
a classic.
There was a classic thing, or then the design thing, the original design. Whose design was it? Was it yours? Was it Joe's? Was it?
There was somebody in. It's our design. It goes back to we formed the company to protect that stuff. It started with Reggie Parks, of course, none of the rest of us were making belts, not professionally anyway. We were making belts, I guess, but not professionally. And some of those guys were, you know, probably in elementary school when that thing came out. They're calling themselves belt makers now, but, there was somebody on the TV side of things that didn't get the memo, didn't know that they didn't know the belts from Joe Marshall anymore. And I think, you know, it was probably a good opportunity for Joe to slip back in there. So he had mentioned, hey, this is not mine. He customized them, did a few things, and he made the one that turned up on television. I wasn't watching the pay-per-view. And a friend of mine texted me and said, hey, what's the deal with the Intercontinental belt? I had recently seen another one of the oval ones. I don't know, really, what are you talking about? And he said, well, there's a classic Intercontinental belt that Cody Rhodes has debuted on pay-per-view. So I watched the replay of pay-per-view, and I made a phone call the next morning. I won't probably go into everything that was said. It never got ugly. I've got very good contacts up there, and they're like, we don't know where it even come from. We didn't even know the people that I called initially that I deal with the most up there. And creative services, they just said, hey, we don't really know. We'll check into it, get back with you. And I'm like, yeah, so you're saying that, you know, we can't just use it? And I said, well, you can, but we got some things to work out because it belongs to us. And I said, and that one's going to have to go. Then it became a thing of, well, what if it just comes off TV? And I said, I can live with that. I don't care if it's on the house shows. I just don't want it on TV. That's what we did for a while. Then what started happening was it started creeping up in some of the backstage segments, and you could see, you'd see a guy doing the backstage promo with that belt on his shoulder, and he'd come out wearing my belt, and I was like, okay, that one's got to go all together. So that's what we did, and we just worked with them and got it pulled all together so that there are no more of those. Well, there was only one of those anyway. They're no longer in possession of it for that to happen. So that's that. But I mean, it never got ugly. I've got very good contacts up there. I just talked to them, and we worked it out and worked out the legal stuff on it. And that was that. I mean, that is the good thing. It's like there's no reason for it to get ugly. It was a miscommunication from somebody that didn't know and thought that it was a Jamar design. And you got to understand, these people are not belt experts. They're not belt marks. This is just their business and day to day how things run. Not everybody gets the same memo. I mean, I can sometimes talk to three or four people in that company about the same issue. They will all contact me over the span of a couple of days because sometimes they just don't. The communication sometimes, you know, there is just. I think it's because they're a big company, you know. Mm-hmm. So, and you got different departments. You got you know, the TV section of that company is not even in a house in the same building as headquarters. And so, you know, you got a lot of people and a lot of different hands on things, and that's just how it happened. Just a miscommunication. It was never never an ugly situation, certainly not one we were thrilled about when we saw it and wondered how it came about, but once it was explained and we got to the bottom of it, it was understandable.
Now, speaking of belt designs, this is just something that just, like, popped into my head. I'm a real big fan of, like, just seeing some of these crazy belts that show up. Like, for instance, the McDonald's United States Championship. I think I saw that on the Reggie site. I don't remember where I saw it on, but didn't McDonald's, like, ask for this belt, or was it just a fan? And, like, what are some of the craziest belts that you've produced over the years?
Yeah, that one, I could not believe. I had people ask me for replicas that were willing to pay, you know, a couple $1,000s for a McDonald's belt, and we couldn't do it because that was done for the company, it was done for the McDonald's Corporation. We couldn't, and we couldn't replicate it.
Oh, so nobody can request a McDonald's United States belt.
Yeah. Do you believe that people did, though? Is that not blatant?
I want that belt.
It's like, what do you do? I guess when you go to order your quarter pounder with cheese, you know, when you got that on your shoulder, it's a little more intimidating or something.
It's Americana right there. But like, what are some of the craziest belts that you've done besides that one?
Crazy. You know, we did... years ago, we did a couple of porn star belts. I guess those and the McDonald's belts might just take the cake. I don't know. You know, we've done so many belts over the years that off the top of my head, those two are the two. In fact, the McDonald's belt is that bizarre. I guess since it was made for the company, the bizarre thing to me is that people actually want copies of it.
Yeah. Now, like as far as the McDonald's belt goes, like, what do you know what that was like specifically used for? Because when I first saw that, I was like, what the hell is this? It's just like such an anomaly as far as belts go, you know?
Honestly, I don't even remember exactly what the wording was on it. I think it had something to do with some sort of sales thing they were doing. It was an intercompany thing and some sort of, I really don't remember exactly, but generally when we do those corporation belts, it's like a, I don't know if it's a sale, but you know, sales award type things, incentive type things, and I think it was something along those lines. Well, it's been several years ago, and maybe even longer than that, and but people still talk about it. I think that's one of the coolest things. I had no idea when we did it, you know, that it was going to get that kind of attention. And when people were asking copies, I was like, well, I can't do it, but you understand what this belt costs, right? And, you know, I had a couple of different guys say, yeah, I don't care, I want it.
Now, Dave, you mentioned your relationship with Jerry Lawler before when you guys swapped belts when you first started out. Talk about some of the other relationships in the business you've made with wrestlers and personalities that to this day that you know you're still cool with and you're still making belts for, or I mean, are there guys that still reach out to you, even guys that don't wrestle anymore, that he still reach out to you, that he still have belts made?
Yeah, sure. You know, gosh, in the last couple of years I've done belts for Buddy Landell, Bill Mullen, for Jerry in the past couple of years. It's in his museum now. As far as friendships, that's a lot of the guys that I know and you know I've gotten to be friends with over the years, or they're pretty much guys like me, and they're guys that even though they went and made their mark in the business, they were big fans to begin with. And that's kind of the sort of thing that bonded us more than anything else. You know, Jim Cornette, Steve Austin, of course, a lot of those guys that I grew up seeing around here, everybody from Bill Dundee to Jimmy Valiant, a lot of the Southern guys, you know, Austin, I believe, are all just great guys that I've, you know, formed relationships with. And, you know, I mentioned Buddy Landell, who's just a tremendous guy, and, you know, Buddy's one of those guys that said, what you see is what you get. You know, the greatest Buddy Landell promos, that's like talking to Buddy all the time. So that's what's awesome about him. Probably the biggest guy out there that, formed a friendship with over doing some work with him is Steve Austin, who's just, again, of what you see is what you get, and you know, just some of the conversations we've had would blow your mind. We're not, you know, when I was doing my work for him a couple of years ago, and we were calling, he would call, we'd talk about stuff, we talked about old Memphis angles, and never even talk about the work that was going on for him. So, you know, I tend to migrate toward those guys that were like me, that were big fans of the territory part of the business, and That's the thing about name dropping and naming names is that I'm gonna hang the phone up and move on. I'm gonna think, man, I didn't mention so and so, because I've been blessed to, over the past 20, 25 years to get to know, you know, a lot of the guys that I've admired. Some of them, like Steve, closer to my age, and of course then the guys I grew up on, like Jerry Lawler, who, has been a friend of mine for, you know, probably 25 years or more. So, you know, it's very, very cool. I'll tell you something, that never gets old. And it's not just a markup thing. And here I go, I was leaving somebody out, J.J. Dillon, who's just one of the best people that I've ever had the privilege to meet, and has become a friend of mine. J.J. is just, J.J., you're never going to meet a finer person, in my opinion, than J.J. Dillon.
We just got a chance to meet him a couple of weeks ago at WrestleCon. With the Shining Wizards guys. He's a cool dude, and we're going to read his book eventually in a couple of weeks.
I think he's going to be a guest on their show.
He's going to be a guest on the Wizards this week, actually. So, yeah, JJ's a really good dude. Dave, you had a question for?
Yeah, it seems like you're a big Territories fan. Like, what are some of your fondest memories of the Territories?
Yeah, especially of Memphis.
Fondest memories, this will go back to, like, 1983. One of the most, if you guys can look this thing up on YouTube or something, the first Lawler Dundee Loser League Town match. And I talked to both guys about this over the years, and they're like, well, it looked good because we really beat the hell out of each other. So that's why it looks so good. You know, everybody talks about the great punches and how Jerry can throw a working punch and look like he's taking your head off. And it's like, you know, kind of like, light as a feather, but Bill says that, yeah, when we kind of get in there and go all out, and you know, even some of the Kings haymakers were connecting and pretty intense stuff. But yeah, you got that, and I'll tell you something else. We started, I was in a very good place growing up just outside of Memphis, because in the early 80s, we started getting all the syndicated stuff in. We got everything from World Class to Mid-South. So, you know, you got Kerry Von Erich winning the world title in Texas Stadium was something we got to see on syndicated television. And of course, a lot of people did, many people did. But I mean, as far as great Territory memories, I mean, those are ones that just pop in my head automatically. Because, you know, I mean, that's a big deal back then. The world title didn't change hands every week or every month or anything like that. So, you know, you got a title change in Texas Stadium, that was a big deal.
Dave, do you still follow the product? I mean, like religiously? Like, do you still follow what's going on right now currently?
I haven't seen a TNA show in probably 4 or 5 years. I don't keep up with that. I have friends that do. I do keep up with the major stuff in WWE. I'm so busy and I got so much going on that I probably don't see as much WWE programming as some of the people that are just really hardcore fans do. But I do, of course, you know, doing so much work with me and so involved with working with them, I do see quite a bit of their product and keep up with the major stuff. Sometimes I actually have to, because it intertwines with what I'm doing for them. So, you know, so that really, for me, as far as stuff I really keep up with, I mean, WWE, while I don't get to see much Ring of Honor, I got great connection there, and keep up with, you know, with some of their stuff. And so, I mean, really, that's about it.
Now, I know you do some of the belts for some of the Japanese companies. Is that correct?
Yeah. We've had the good fortune to do some of the IWGP stuff, and it's still very, very popular. That's actually Rico's connection with that New Japan office. He's got great connections there, and then they just come and Rico brings it to me and says, this is what we're going to do, and, you know, and we make it happen.
Yeah, because those belts have definitely, especially now, have come a long way since the original, like, IWGP, the first generation belt, to this magnificent thing now. It has, like, the plates, like, on the side with, like, every single champion on it.
Yeah, those guys don't half-ass do anything. Yeah, they do it right. I mean, you're talking just thousands and thousands of dollars that went into that belt. And to really pretty much, I mean, when they want to do the Intercontinental thing, I did try to talk about the white leather because of the WWE white leather, but that's what they wanted. And so all their belts are you know, just really nice stuff.
So, now, you've done 1,000 of these, Dave. Like, what's the one belt that you don't mind doing all the time? Like, what's the one design that you do that every time you do it, you don't mind doing it? It's not a chore anymore. Like, what's the one design that you really dig doing?
I think I could probably cut out a winged eagle, cut out and tool a winged eagle strap in my sleep, and I probably have. because there's been so many of them, and it's really, if that one's not particularly a chore, because it's just been done so many times, and it's still one of my favorite belts that one endures after all these years. So I think probably that one comes to mind immediately. It's like okay, here's another winged eagle, and that's not a nightmare. That's not something that you really dread. So I would go with that one. That's the first one that comes to mind. I mean, you think about that. I mean, while the belt's been, look at how long the belt's been retired, yet it's still one of the most popular, most talked about belts.
Would you say like that's probably like your number one, like as far like outside of like working with WWE and other companies, like as far as like making belts for fans, is that like the top seller?
Yeah, you know, it's been an alternating thing over the years, but over the long haul, it has been the top seller. There's no doubt about it.
Oh, that probably be the Intercontinental title.
Yes, that's probably. I'll tell you, when it gets down into number twos and number threes, you start getting competitive with we don't really make a lot of them anymore, but man, we made a ton of those old NWA World Television titles, Tully Blanchard, Arn Anderson.
That's
belt.
My favorite belt. That is my absolute favorite belt.
So much so that when WWE.com wanted to do a feature a few months ago, then we were talking about what we would talk about, what we wouldn't talk about, and they were like, well, you know, that's still on top of that. Yeah, absolutely. We'll talk about that one. And the guy that was doing the interview with me, he said, man, I love that belt. And he says, yeah, that's got to be in there. So I thought that was very cool that even you know, WWE.com was all over that. Like, yeah, we love that belt.
That is my favorite belt. That we just saw one of your NWA television titles at WrestleCon in New Jersey a few weeks ago, and I spotted it like right away. Some dude walked in with it, and I'm like, that's one of Milliken's belts. I couldn't believe it. Like, oh, I saw one of your belts up close, like, it was 2 feet away from me, and I'm like, and as a...
It looked magnificent.
It did, Dave. I'm not because you're on the show, just it's because when I first started doing this, my whole purpose was just to talk about old school wrestling. Like I said, I'm pushing 40, so... And when Dave came on board, I mean, Dave's a little younger than I am, we started talking, like, swapping stories back and forth, and I told him, like, you know, being a New Yorker, going to the Garden every month, occasionally seeing an NWA show, like, when you see the belts up close, you were always intrigued by the design,
yeah.
And then as you get older, and then, of course, the magazines, and we actually got a chance to talk to Bill Apter about this, too, like, you know, just the pictures and the history, and then, like, seeing the belt up close, I just, it was awesome. For me, it was a mark out moment for me, you know, so.
I think that's very cool of you to say as far as looking, you know, my connection to it. But I'll tell you that I'm not any different. That was some of the greatest things. When I was so young and couldn't drive myself to the matches, and I would have my dad take me on. My dad wanted to get the cheap seats, and which in Memphis they were all cheap seats, but, you know, we were setting up, you know, in those bleeds. And so over time I was able to kind of work my way down and get him on the floor, you know, like it close. And that was the coolest thing, is to go out for the entrances, because on television, you know, they move the belts around. They're never still. I mean, you could pause it in those days, your VCR and watch it jump a little bit while you're trying to look at it. That's what kind of belt mark I was. I was pausing my VCR to try to get these things for hours. Recreating, you know, doing my homemade versions of these great Reggie belts, or, you know, some of the other belts, even the old Malkovich cast belts or whatever. But anyway, one of the coolest things was getting down on the floor, getting close enough, and when these guys would come out with the belts, I'd just stare at them. I remember every time Nick Bockwinkel came to town, and Nick was pretty frequent visitor here to bring the AWA world belt to work with Lawler. And I would go down, and it's like I could see Jerry every week. So, I mean, I thought the world of Jerry. He was awesome. But when every time Nick Bockwinkel was in town, I'd go over to Nick's side just so I could see the belt up close, because it's always something you're going to see about it in person that you didn't see in the magazine or that you didn't see on television. And so, I mean, I can completely relate to it, man. There's nothing like, you know, being close to him for the first time and getting a good look at him.
Now, what do you think, like, today is still, like, the appeal and the draw for belts? Because, you know, nowadays, especially with WWE, there's so many belts. And, you know, nowadays anybody could get a belt. Like, what do you think is still the draw, you know, for all these championship belts, you know, whether they mean something or not?
I'm not exactly sure. I have a little bit of a hard time hearing. I'm not exactly sure what exactly were you asking?
What do you think is still the appeal of, not just, like, having
all
these
the
belts,
appeal.
Yeah, like still people want championship belts. They still, you know, want to see champions out there.
I think that the replicas have changed that whole game, the mass-produced replicas, because I went to Raw's in Memphis last week, and I went down there, and I'm looking around, and I'm seeing grown men out there with the $20 Mattel toys on their shoulders, and I think, you know, and I think that's because they probably couldn't afford the higher-end replicas, and you see this in this appeal. I think there's like, you know, it's just like, yeah, all the stuff that you see on television, it's the closest thing. I mean, it's the only thing I can really, I couldn't imagine if we'd had those replicas growing up. It might have changed my whole path. But as far as the appeal goes, I think it's just a living vicariously type thing. You know, it's like you get a chance these days, you can have a replica of most of the belts that are out there. Even if you can't get that one of the handmade real ones, you can get one of the mass-produced ones. And I just think that it's a chance to, it's just kind of a living vicariously, you know, it's like you look at that, you can't be that guy on television, but you can have the belt and you can show you. And the people that are on the fringes are not even, especially if they're not fans, and not even on the fringes for that matter, if they're not fans at all and you got this great belt, it's a mass-produced belt, so they don't know the difference. And they look at it and I've seen people mark out over, you know, these $200 replica belts. And, you know, I just think that people never get tired. Belts are all about showing off. It's bragging rights, and when you've got something like that to show off to somebody, it's always going to be a conversation piece.
So, anything new on the horizon for the Dave Millican camp? What's anything new? Anything exciting going on with you guys? What's going on?
I think the latest news is probably we don't usually talk a whole lot about upcoming stuff because we can't, but as far as what's out there, this past weekend, the Jay Briscoe camouflage belt debuted for Ring of Honor, and they got, you know, some really, really good feedback on the belt, and some people, of course, in the society we live in, talking about the fact that it had partial Confederate flags on it, saying, oh, it's racism and slavery and connecting all these things. I'm like, you know, it's funny, when the Road Warriors were wearing the national tag belts that had the same flag on it, nobody was going up calling them racist, so I don't...
Exactly.
Exactly. Yeah, I don't know what that was all about, but, you know, it's just a flag, just something to go up the gimmick and stuff. But anyway, but as far as the belt mark reception on it, it's been very, very good. The people who always think they, you know, that I have to have a cause, or I don't get to find all that and make myself a heel there, but, you know, people are going to make of it what they want to, but it's just a gimmick belt. And, but if you guys haven't seen that, I need to get you a picture of it. It's camouflage strap and, that's our latest news. It's got something pretty cool about it. It's got shotgun shell snaps, we've never done anything before. It's got 12 gauge shotgun shell stuff cover, so that's kind of cool. But that's the most, speaking of unique, I probably should have threw that one back in with the McDonald's belt, because that camouflage strap, that's got to be in the most unique belt that I've ever done.
Wow, amazing. Now, I think we got one more question for you, before we wrap up. I was just curious, like, what was the name of the very first belt that you ever made? Like, you know, whether it was a cardboard belt or whatever, what was it called?
The very first belt that I ever did, the best I can remember, was I took that Southern Heavyweight design that had caught my eye on television, and after thinking about it when I'm putting it in, doing my little design on it, I'm from a little small town called Drummond's, Tennessee. and so instead of Southern Heavyweight Champion, I put Drummond's Heavyweight Wrestling Champion on it. And as far as I remember, that's the very first belt. It looked like the Southern belt, or at least in my mind it did. I mean, I'm sure it really didn't, but in my mind it did. And then I took it around and said all my friends that I had the Drummond's Heavyweight belt, so... That was that. I think that was the first one. It's shaped like the old Memphis Southern Heavyweight belt, seven-plater that Lawler and all those guys carried around for so many years.
Wow, we actually just pulled up a photo of the Jay Briscoe Championship. This is insane. It's got the camouflage. It's got the American flag. Like, half of it's the American flag, half of it's the Confederate flag.
Right, that's Jay's logo. I think it's a newer logo, but that's Jay's logo. Mm. That whole centerpiece thing with the skull, with the bandana and the flags combined like that. That's Jay's logo, and they wanted that in the center of it. So there you go. But that's got to be among the most unique ones too. Like, I should have thrown that one in there right off the bat.
It's an awesome design. Listen, Dave, we know you're a busy man. We don't want to keep you too much longer, but we really appreciate you coming on the show today.
Man, it's been great talking to you guys. I appreciate the opportunity to talk to you.
Absolutely, and you're welcome to come on anytime. Please keep in touch. We'll send you a copy of the show if you could just put it out there, let everybody know what's going on. But
absolutely.
But no, seriously though, you are you're one of a kind. They call you the Ace of Belts. There's a reason why they call you the Ace of Belts, man. We really appreciate you coming on.
Absolutely.
And we thank you for coming on the Turnbuckle Throwbacks Wrestling Podcast. And please come on again and enjoy the rest of your year.
Thanks for having me, guys. Feel free to call anytime. Love talking to you.
Thank you, sir. Take care of yourself. Dave friggin' Millican.
That was fucking awesome.
Dude, when Tony sent me a couple of questions, and I had my questions, you had your questions, but
yeah.
Just hearing him talk about, I know he can't go into a lot of stuff because he's...
Yeah, it's...
Because it's secretive.
Copyright.
And you know what, though? Not for nothing. It's a credit to him that he even agreed to come on. Because I know these guys, these freaking belt marks, they come on.
Yeah.
And they're, constantly, hawking him about shit. You know, it's like, whatever. I'm glad he answered our questions.
Yeah.
I'm glad he addressed the IC title thing, which is an issue for me.
I didn't know that there was an issue, but I'm glad you brought it up.
There was a huge issue, yeah. And Tony was like, I hope you ask him about it. I'm like, yeah, I'm going to.
Good thing there's some people that still watch what's going on now.
But you know what, dude? Just hear him talking about Lawler and Buddy Landell and the Road Warriors, and he's a fan.
Yeah.
That's the best part of it, Dave. He's a fan. Just like us. And that's how he started. That's how he started.
No doubt.
Well, that was probably one of the best highlights of my podcasting career. I got to talk to Dave Millican.
Yeah, and actually doing some research on this guy. Like I mentioned, I watched that one on YouTube. There's bits and pieces of a shoot interview with this guy. He's very personable, just down-to-earth guy. I don't know, hardly know anything about this guy. I didn't even know he existed.
Oh, so no.
But he's fucking awesome. He's a great guy.
Yeah, when Tony mentioned they wanted to get him for the Wizards, I knew I wanted to speak to him.
Yeah.
And I thought, because of what we do, I think it was only fitting that we do.
Well, for what we do, belts still mattered back then, so... It just to hear the person behind all this stuff, and to finally find out the information on that McDonald's United States Championship.
Hysterical. And that Jay Briscoe belt is gorgeous.
Yeah.
I was scrolling. I didn't mean to take the picture, but I thought I heard some background noise, and I was trying to kill the noise. I didn't want it to come up on the show while he was talking.
Okay.
But I'm not even going to lie to you, brother. If the money is right, I will buy a Dave Millican belt before I leave this planet.
I think so will I.
I'm looking right at my logo right now. I'm putting that on a championship belt.
Mm-hmm. The Turnbuckle Throwback logo.
Wrestling Podcast. That's going to be our belt. It's going to be our show belt.
Nice.
And we'll bring it to shows, and I'm going to display it. And
I'll say this for myself. With the changes I'm occurring in my life, selling tons of stuff out of my house, stuff I never thought I would sell.
Yeah.
I would still buy a belt. One of the things I'm still keeping in my house right now is a replica Rocky championship belt.
You have a Rocky belt?
I have a Rocky belt. It's one of these, somebody got it for me from, a Toys R Us or something like that. But it's awesome. It's the Rocky belt, so...
I think the championship...
It has to stay in my possession.
Right. The championship belt is so... What's the word I'm trying to use without sounding like a complete tool? it's the symbolism.
Yeah.
Is... like you mentioned, it still made a difference. It was still, that's what you strived for.
Yeah.
Not getting the pop, not getting over with the crowd. Meanwhile, you doing that in the long short of it, but
It's the trophy.
It's the trophy,
right.
Man. It's the, like he, like Dave said, it was. It's the bragging right. You know,
whether it's that $20 belt you got from Toys R Us or the
or the middle aged guy or the middle aged guy that walked into WrestleCon with a Millican television belt.
And you know that guy dropped like almost like $3,000 on that thing too, so.
And rightfully so. Like as soon as he saw it, dude, I was like, oh,
it's a work of art.
And I thought that's a Millican belt. Like you know, like it's like a car.
Yeah,
that's a Honda. That's a Ford. That's a Millican. That's a Reggie Park.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
That's the kind of shit that we talk about on the Turnbuckle Throwback Wrestling podcast. Yeah. All right. So listen, this is going to wrap it up. We've had a pretty long day of podcasting. We did a couple. We did a huge throwback, and we had Dave Millican on the show.
This is a long show. This is like almost like
2 hours. Two and a half. We've done 2.5 hour shows before. WrestleMania Four was pretty big.
I'm not used to the long shows, but
You know what though?
But this was a special occasion.
Yeah, you know, I think the better we get, the longer they become, and I really don't give a shit. So, I mean, unless you have somewhere else to be, but
I do. But
yeah, no.
But this is it's all good.
And we want to thank Dave Millican for coming on. I'm glad you're feeling better. I was a little worried about you there for a second.
Yeah, well, last week I could hardly like talk, and then I had to do the friggin' music video on Saturday, so. I was a busy man.
All right, well, let's get into the plugs. You can actually reach the show. Let me close that out. Silly me. But, you know, you can actually reach the show, Turnbuckle Throwbacks, on the Shining Wizards Network, swn.shiningwizards.com. You can reach us at facebook.com/Turnbuckle Throwbacks. Dave and I will be putting up the clips of the...
The dump Matsumoto.
Matsumoto and...
Chikusa Nagayo.
Nagayo feud.
And again, I'm making it easy. You know, if you can name every single weapon that was used during those three matches,
yeah, nobody
we'll hook you up. With
nobody
some
nobody
stuff.
Wants our prizes, Mega Powers.
Yeah,
nobody wants our prizes.
We'll hook them up with the autograph figure and hit them up with some DVDs of these awesome matches.
Yeah.
So Phil's phone is ringing. Yeah. How unprofessional, Phil.
Yeah, right. I should have took the phone.
You have
out.
Somebody like me here, and the phone's ringing.
Yeah, you know,
it
what,
makes sense, but come on.
The phone line was supposed to be in here, yeah. But my wife snuck it in. I'm sorry about that. But no, again, nobody wants our prizes, Dave. I'm a little pissed off about that.
Well, we'll see after this episode.
Anyway, facebook.com/Turnbuckle Throwbacks. Join a group page. It's very active. We got a cool, hold on a second. That was annoying. But no, I mean, nobody wants, you know. Anyway, Facebook.
They'll want our prizes now.
Yeah, facebook.com/Turnbuckle Throwbacks, at T-Buckle T-Backs. Is Twitter. Email the show, TurnbuckleThrowbacks1@gmail.com. Also, we're on the Rantem Radio Network, rantem radio.com. I want to give a shout-out to Double A and the boys. We're on iTunes. We're on Stitcher. We're on Audio Boo. We're on Buzzsprout.com.
We're on Clutch and Wiggle.
Are we on Clutch and Wiggle?
I don't know.
The network or the Wizards are?
I think the Wizards are, but I want to be on there just so I can say Clutch and Wiggle.
Well, that's on you. Reach out to them and see if they want to
come. I'll reach around to
them. Shout out to everybody in the network. Midnight Jury, Fallen Angels, Two and a Half Wrestlers.
I have a request. Can we play a song?
Yeah, we can play a song. You want to play a song?
It's Halloween, so...
You want to play a song coming out, or you want
to... This is one of my favorites. We haven't really done anything Halloween-related, so I want to have a Halloween song to take us out.
Absolutely.
Kind of a Halloween song, but...
Sure. All right. You can pull up the tube of you. And
YouTube.
Yeah, what's tickle on your tits then, Mega Powers?
You know, let's go out with TSOL's Code Blue.
What is it?
TSOL Code Blue.
Oh, TSOL, huh?
Yes.
All right. Let's see. Let me just mute that. Make sure we don't... Let's see. Make sure there's no commercial. See?
There is a commercial.
I hate fucking commercials.
You know, I bet the guy that has this song on here doesn't even own this song, wasn't even in the band, and he's got this commercial playing over so he can make that sweet cash.
Make that cash.
I want some of that cash and those combos that are being advertised. Well, folks.
Yeah, it's going to do it for us this week. Again, thank you for everybody for tuning in. Any comments, questions you have, you can, you know, Dave and I aren't that hard to find with social networking whores.
Yeah.
Little old school punk for you.
80s Southern California.
Yeah.
All right, guys.
You guys have a great week. Happy Halloween. Tricks and treats and whatnot.
Sayonara.
Sayonara.
Until next time.
Yeah, until next time. Same bat time, same bat channel for Mega Powers. I'm the Impact player, Mr. Phil Rea, and you've been listening to the Turnbuckle Throwbacks Wrestling Podcast exclusively on the Shining Wizards Network. Say goodnight, Gracie.
Good night, Gracie.
Don't.